of advocating Zenqani that you have already?
Chair, there is only one apology that I can recall is from the Deputy Minister. She is not able to attend today's meeting due to the futile awareness campaign she's engaged in, and then which ends on the 9th of this month. So that's her apology, Chair.
Thank you, Lindy. And from the side of the department, Lindy, accept that one that you have put forward. Lindy, no apologies.
No apologies from our side, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much. Oh, the one Chair, my apologies, but we'll manage it. The CFO has to run to the Appropriations Committee. So he will. I will make a request that in the presentation we get into the expenditure first, and then we deal with the balance of the presentation, and then he will go over that side, and then we'll come back to that side, because we have to present to both sides. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Lindy. Lindy, slide the agenda. I hope that the apologies have been accepted as presented.
Okay, Chair. Sorry, Chair. The system is failing me now. Yoli?
Yes?
Do you have an agenda next to you?
It's here, but it's not open. I can open it quickly.
Can you see? I have so many. Okay, it's fine. It's fine, sister. Thank you. Greetings again, members. Chair, today is the 7th. We have welcomed the opening remarks, Chair, and introduction. So you want to take over, Chair? We are in apologies. We've covered apologies.
Over Lindy, to you, Chair. I was just saying, lead us in the agenda.
Okay.
What is it that is going to happen?
Chair, the next item is going to be the internal business. To start with the A list and the B version as resolved in our last meeting. From 10 o'clock, we'll start with the department with their presentation. And then we deliberate and responses at 12:30. The meeting will adjourn. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I just want to get the clarity from the acting DG. Whether was he suggesting that even before the A-list, the CFO should present something? What were you saying?
Chair, thank you very much. I thought that, and I stand to be corrected, that the A-list is last on the agenda, that we would present you for first, and the A-list would come last. But I stand to be corrected, Chair. If the A-list is first, then we would then request that we take leave to the Appropriations Committee and then resume as soon as we're done. But if the A-list is last, then we can certainly start with Q4. And in the presentation, we will start with the expenditure part and then get into the content.
Okay. Excuse me. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, maybe you haven't managed to see prior the agenda, né? Because A list is first, and then we continue with the briefing and the department. But we are flexible to allow the CFO to present after the A list has been adopted. And yeah, thank you very much, Lindy. can I get, honorable members, can I get the hand that
okay.
adopt? Hello?
Yes, Chair, sorry, it's me again. My apologies. So I wanted to get a sense, Chair, of the time that you would conclude the A-list so that some of us can step out and then come back in. So if we have a sense of estimated time of conclusion of the A-list, and then we will come in after that, if that's okay, Chair.
By LinkedIn, we want to know when are we going to finish the A-list. Let's rather shift the agenda and amend the agenda in terms of taking the A-list, especially the person that is going to assist us from the side of legal advisors will be able to stay with us until the end of the meeting. Honorable members, can I put the proposal of starting with the department out of their commitment and also their humble request from us?
Chair.
Honorable Tifan.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I would like to second the proposals that we are putting forward, that we change the agenda so that we accommodate the department and we can deal with the A-list towards the end of the meeting, so that when they are presented, they are able to leave. So I move for that secondment to the amendment of the agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Stock. Any seconder to that motion, knowing exactly the program is tied to everyone, if at least they request for us to do that, and there's no need to be very stereotyped on it. We can do it as long as the person that is going to advise us in the legal, what is it, state law advisor is going to be present, and the department of legal advisor is going to be present. Honorable Jane Manganye. Honorable Jane's connection is not as, in fact, we can't even hear her. So can I get any other hand from our side of the honorable members in terms of the proposal that has been set? Honorable Lizette?
Yes, good morning, Chair, and good morning to the colleagues and the department and our legal advisors. I will second the proposal made by yourself and Honourable Stock. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Lizelle. Let's quickly go straight to the department. The agenda has been adopted by Honourable Stock and seconded by Honourable Lizelle. Thank you ever so much. Department, over to you. Honorable members, let's rather take notes on what we are going to ask in terms of whoever is going to present out of their request. Seemingly, there is a connection or connectivity problem. I also see Honorable Opperman is struggling with the connection. So I'm sure she's going to join soon when she is fine. Honorable AG.
Thank you very much.
AD, not AG, Auditor General. But acting DG, AD.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you indeed for the promotion to being an honorable member. No, Chair, maybe before I start, I see Minister has just joined. As just before I get into the detail of the presentation, Chair, I think Minister would be able to lead us in this presentation. So with your guidance, Honourable Chair, I'd like to ask that please allow the Minister to open on behalf of the Department of Health and Outside Option. Yeah,
I have it. I have the volume now. Thanks. Oh, Minister, you are present. You are ready for the political briefing. I thought that you will be getting in and out, jumping from the cabinet into ourselves. Then if you are present, let's first give you that opportunity to give us the political overview. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My sincere apology. We are juggling here. I also had to speak at the Select Committee. The committee meetings happened to be starting at the same time, but I'm done on the other side. And thank you very much for graciously giving me this opportunity. Let me just do that. Thank you, Chairperson. May I please request to remove the video because my network is not so very good. At least you can see it's me. I'm not a robot. Ooh, I'm
sure. Thank you very much, Minister. You can switch off the video. I also wanted the honorable members and officials to see me. How beautiful I am today.
Hi, yes, Chairperson, you are. Thank you so much. Yes, we ended Women's Month, but we continue 365 days. Chairperson Nonkosi Mvana, thank you so much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, Honorable Deputy Minister Henrietta in absentia. I know that she is in the Northwest. Chief Executive Officers of the South African Social Security Agency, Ms. Dotimemela Kambula, and Acting Executive Officer of the National Development Agency, Bongani Makongo. What I'm not sure of, Chairperson, now is whether they are this side or they are in the Select Committee. I don't know, but I guess we always have to split one way or the other. Thank you for the opportunity for me to present the department's fourth quarter report on financial and non-financial performance for the 2021-22 financial year. This is the quarter that started in January and ended in March of this year. And Honorable Chair, I also wanted to indicate, obviously, that the due processes that have to take place, we are now presenting the fourth quarter, and it must also be noted, obviously, that COVID-19 really disturbed a lot of our work. And so we find ourselves not necessarily being behind because we wanted to do so, but because of the challenges that we face. And as we are now presenting the fourth quarter at this time, we are also beginning to look at the plans for the next financial year, which is 2022-2023. And therefore the pressure is on all of us. And I know that it's on you too as the portfolio committee, but I know that the pressure is quite high on the people that I work with both in the ministry and the department, but we are up to the task, Honorable Chair. For the period under review, the department achieved 70% of its planned targets as outlined in the 2021-22 annual performance plan. For the quarter-on-quarter vantage point, this represents a 6% decline compared with the third quarter of 2021-2022. And I think the department will further elaborate on that. Notwithstanding this decline against the planned quarterly targets, I'm confident that the department is continuously factoring implementation improvements, lessons into each new quarter and financial year that this transitions into. Most importantly, the department, the South African Social Security Agency, SASSA, and the National Development Agency, NDA, are increasingly pulling their planning and resources together through the portfolio approach when addressing the people's felt needs. For these reasons, overall, as much as the portfolio's collective investment contribution towards improving human level outcomes introduces inefficiencies, the effectiveness of these interventions is starting to be evident in the change of our people's lives. I continuously insist to the department, SASSA and the NDA alike, that our ultimate measure of performance success is the state of the people. What we do must be seen and must be felt, and the people must see the change. But obviously, Chairperson, we're not the only ones that have to contribute towards the change. It is for that reason that I continuously say to the department, we need to tap into other departments so that the creation of a conducive environment for our people is interconnected ourselves as a Department of Social Development with the rest of government, so that it is seen and is shown that we are one government with one purpose, and that is serving our people. Therefore, the portfolio's collective investment in addressing the state of the people is the most potent response to poverty, inequalities, vulnerabilities, and undevelopment and shocks and disasters. While the department was attending to the ordinary programs with their object to improve planned outcomes relative to the quality of the lives of the people, it was challenged to be responsive to the people's need for reconstruction and recovery following the devastation and vulnerabilities that were introduced to their lives by the economic, health, climate, and civil shocks that our society witnessed in the recent months and years. Our intervention in this regard is work in progress. For instance, we continue to implement the special COVID-19 SRD grants, the response to the victims of the earlier floods in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape provinces. On the 31st of March 2022, the department had spent 99.2% of its budget allocated of 235 billion for the 2021-2022 financial year. Today's presentation will contextualize the factors and areas within which the underspending occurred. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, please receive the department's fourth quarter report on the financial and non-financial performance for 2021-22 financial year for your due consideration and engagement. And at all times, Chairperson, we continue to thank you and the committee members for always being on the lookout and for always doing the oversight, which also helps us as a department to make sure that we improve. Over to you, Chairperson, and through you, the DG will introduce the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. What we appreciate in the portfolio committee is your presence, even if we are going to request to be excused, but with that respect, showing us that you prioritize us, we really appreciate. Thank you ever so much. When you feel that you have to move to other meeting or to the cabinet, you are free to do so. Thanks ever so much. Over to you, AD.
The opportunity once again to present before the committee and share with you this morning our fourth quarter performance. Sorry. Can we please get the mic to share the presentation on the screen? I hope, Chair, that the presentation is visible now on the screen. So,
yes,
okay, thank you very much. Thank you. We can go to the next slide. Thank you very much once again. So the fourth quarter, as you would know, Honorable Chair, is slide four. Okay, correct. Of course, it marks the end of the 2021 financial year and our reporting period, and we achieved 70% of this planned target, which reflects a decline of about 6% in comparison to the third quarter, which was at 76% of our achievements. The lower numbers of the targets were achieved in the fourth quarter. Now, there were six targets which were not achieved in this quarter, although they were overachieved in the previous quarters. And of course, this implies that the related annual targets are achieved, even though the fourth quarter targets are not achieved, but if you look at the manner in which we ought to report, we call it a quarter-specific reporting framework that we have to use as guided by the Department of DPFE and National Treasury. So you may overachieve in one quarter, but the fact that you overachieved in one quarter doesn't necessarily mean that in the quarter in which you are reporting, you have achieved. It's just achieved. Essentially in terms of the target set out. So in our case, those six targets that were unachieved were actually overachieved in the previous quarter, in quarter three. If you were to add the six targets and look at the actual achievements in the quarter, you would be sitting at about 81%. But because of the way in which the quarter-specific reporting methodology is designed, we have to report on it in this particular manner. And therefore, it was at 70%. And of course, we will give, and those targets were largely in families, social crime, prevention, anti-substance abuse, HIV and AIDS, children's services to persons with disabilities, as well as the non-profit organizations. In the meeting today, you will hear from the responsible chief directors and DDGs on some of these matters, particularly in those areas that have been not achieved, but also the impact that has been derived from the areas that indeed have been achieved. And the overall picture of the departments for the financial year, of course, will be presented when we present our annual report to you in the next few weeks, and we'll indicate to you the trajectory that we followed, whether we've gone down, whether we've stayed at this level, or whether we've improved. One slide back, honey. In most areas, there was a sense of achievement, and in some areas, of course, there's some targets that were not achieved. And these are due, to be honest with you, in some areas due to inefficiencies on our end, but in the main, they're due to dependencies on other organizations, like we will share around the targets related to legislation in some instances. Because we have dependencies on the state advisor and other related organizations that we have to work on. But we have, of course, built into this very strong risk strategy and mitigation strategy by looking at what could go wrong in not achieving the target, and then also focusing on the mitigation measures to address what could go wrong. Part of what we look at is those dependencies that we have outside of the organization, that particularly those that relate to legislation. Some, in some cases, they relate to procurement because of these changing conditions that are put upon us at the time. Of course, one of the things that we've done as a sense of accountability is to really look at our performance review sessions, which I think have been very useful in that we are able to identify the root causes of us not being able to achieve the targets, and we are able to put in place measures to address them in the forthcoming quarter. And in some cases, like those targets that is the annual plan or the annual review when we present, we will show you that some of those targets we've migrated into the 2022-2023 financial year for planning. And I think that part of what we do, not to belabor the point, is that the manner in which we've crafted our targets has really improved over time. You would note that before we applied what we call SMART principles, we were not able to, I'm on the previous slide, by the way, we were able to craft them in a smarter way. And before that, we had serious challenges in the way in which we craft targets because we did not meet the targets just primarily for the manner in which we put the language. That has improved quite drastically, and the planning overall within the organization has improved quite drastically. The minister introduced a very important aspect to our planning process, which is looking specifically at the operational plan. And that helps us also to strengthen the manner in which we plan for the implementation of our targets. When we look at the operational plans, we're able to see the how of what we are going to do, of what we've planned, of what we've put in the APP. We look at the how, looking at dependencies, but also looking at our own efficiencies in terms of the implementation of these specific targets. I think the important thing to highlight to the committee is that we roll out our work within the portfolio approach. And so you'll find that some of the targets that we have dependencies even on provinces. Because of what we call concurrent functions, in some areas, we are dependent purely on the provinces to be able to do this. So the rollout of our targets is done within the context of the portfolio approach. And then, of course, central to the implementation of achieving our targets is to ensure that we improve the quality of life of all our people. And we respond to the needs that is put out there and the hopes of the millions of people in terms of the work that we do. And so we must ensure that our interventions derive the necessary impact that they are required to. If you go to the next slide, this is just a high level. From the 64 slide, targets that we had, you would note that 45 of them were achieved and 19 of them were not achieved. As I indicated, while this may translate to 80 to 70%, if you add the 6 that were overachieved in the previous quarter, we could potentially be sitting at 81%. In fact, we are, just that the reporting mechanism would help us do that. You would see on the next slide that we started off on a B, as they would call it. We then went up to winning ways in the second quarter, around 86% of our targets. We dipped a little bit in the third quarter, and in the fourth quarter, dipped again, of course. In the fourth quarter, I always say to the team that we always have to start well so that we end well as well. So our emphasis, especially in the current financial year, is really to make sure that if in the last financial year we received 77% in the first quarter, in this financial year we must be able to strive for much more than 77%. So when we come back and present to you the first quarter, you'll see the fruits of these measures that we've put in place. Now I'm going to jump to slide. Let's go, Fanny. Let's go to your slide. Chair, to slide 39. Am I right? Yeah, 39. Can we go to 39 and I'll allow 41. Sorry. I'll allow Fanny to present on this slide, Chair, as indicated, and then you will take leave, and then we'll continue with the remainder of the presentation. Okay? Thank you.
Chair DG. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister. And thank you for allowing me to present the financial information as DG indicated. We double booked in terms of some of the things that we need to do today. So let me take you through our quarter four expenditure for the prior financial year. We're looking at only a 99.2% spending that we've spent in terms of our annual budget for the financial year. When we come to the various quarters, we can see that we've significantly increased our spending in quarter three and four. We were, however, concerned in quarter one and two of our slow spending, but then in quarter three and four, we've actually picked up in terms of our projects and our programs, and then we ensured that we spent the allocation that we have for the prior financial year. These are just the quarterly spendings of our main operations. You can see on compensation of employees, fairly stagnant from the first to the... The expenditure for our compensation of employees, we ended up with a 126 million spending for the fourth quarter. That's because of the annual increases that we received for the cost of living. And there you can see the difference in the goods and services that we've actually spent 124 million in the last quarter of the financial year. The summary for the expenditure for the various programs and economic classification, all the main programs, program one to program five, have spent almost 100% of the allocations. Only program two, the social assistance grants, there was a saving of 1.8 million, and we'll talk about the spending or underspending in terms of 1.8 billion for our social assistance, as well as the other main programs. And if you look at the economic classification, our COE, our compensation of employees, had a saving of 27 million, and we also will explain this. There was a very small saving or underspending on our goods and services, only 4 million. And there's the social grants amounts of 1.8 billion. If we look at the various reasons for underspending, our administration, we had normal staff turnover and also some operational savings, so it's a very small margin that we underspend. If you look at our social assistance, 99.1% spending in terms of this. This is the normal payment of the 18 million social grant beneficiaries, but also the ones that we've added on the 350 grant. So that was extended up until March 2022. There was additional amount of 26 billion allocated to the department, and actually we've overspent in terms of this. We had savings currently on old age and child support grant, which we could use for the overspending on the 350. But the overall, there was a saving of 1.8 million on the social grants, which is because of less expected beneficiaries that have applied during the financial year. On our social security program, the 99.7%, this is also where the SASSA administration is lying. But there is also the allocation that is earmarked for the establishment of the inspectorate. We all know that the bill was only passed in the third quarter of the financial year, so the inspector could not be established, but we are going full ahead in this financial year. But the main saving on program three relates to the inspectorate, because there is about quite a number of posts that hasn't been filled, as well as operational costs. Under welfare services, we all know that we still were under COVID-19 restrictions that we had to abide to. So we had less traveling, we did more virtual meetings, there was less accommodation required. Some of our outreach events was also virtual in terms of this. So that is why there's saving on welfare service. The same rule applies for social policy integrated our community development programs. Also a small margin in terms of underspending for this specific program. Then if we go to just the operational budget, so what we try to establish, or what we try to illustrate here, is just to show to the committee that if we strip out all our social grant allocation, our transfers to our councils, our transfers to our entities, this is basically the picture that you will see just on operational. The operational budget of the department amounts to fairly about 1 billion rand for the financial year, and this is how we've spent administration, we've almost spent 100% of the allocation. For social security, the 81 or 82%, and that's because of the inspectorate. Welfare services and 68%, that's because of the COVID restrictions, as well as for program 5, 71% spending. So the programs were really doing well. Then just on our goods and services, because this is the area we need to do operations, we cannot touch on the others in terms of capex or compensation. So you can see all the main programs have spent almost 100% of their budget in the financial year for goods and services. Chairperson, thank you very much. This is just a high level in terms of how we did for the prior financial year. There was no unauthorized expenditures in terms of overspendings on the main programs. So we have ensured that all programs have spent within the allocated budget. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you.
Chairperson, if someone would say this, I will then
proceed
with the presentation, especially the areas that have been presented. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable members and colleagues who have looking. I think, Chair, one of the things that we do is to, start by highlighting the areas that by end of the full on the reporting period will not match. And we want to be honest and put them upfront. And one of those areas relates to finance. What we wanted to do in the previous financial year was for the DSD so that to respond even to the issues the president raised relating to the 40% of women participating in economic activity. So we then crafted a target that said we want to utilize or establish a database of all women-owned businesses so that we are able to target them. However, in our engagement and with the National Treasury, it came out that we will appear a setting aside or coming up with what is called a setting aside policy, and that would be considered irregular. So as a result, we couldn't then do that. But what then we advised to do was to say we can then advise to promote the subcontracting, and this is allowed in terms of the PFMA, in terms of the Regulation 9.2 Section D, which then promotes the subcontracting a minimum of 30%. And what was important is that of the value of the currency of business, which at least we know that at least this was 51% of those businesses are owned or by the mainly the black people, and largely it would be women. So that's what we could do. So as a result, we could not achieve having our own a database of all the women-owned businesses as advised against, but in the treasury, because they said that would be then committing what would be regular, because it would be a setting aside policy. And one of the areas as well, relating to IT, MST, we had planned to roll out the training on the substance abuse and one of the systems that we've done, because the procurement process in terms of finalization of the contract took longer than anticipated. Also, there's another system as well where we wanted to roll out in terms of alternative care. And this was because of the disjuncture between what was in the our plan in terms of the years of the period in which data to be delivered vis-a-vis what was contained in the actual contract of the service provider. So with us, this became an annual target, yet in the contract is for 24 months. So there have been then those particular gaps, and those things have been sorted out now. I'm able to report that. And what has been corrected, but also what has been done in the current APP is that we no longer separate and looking at each single systems, but now we look at a total of systems, for example, alternative care as well as the substance abuse system. On the NDC oversight, Once we had developed the shareholder compact, but we could not implement it because it took longer, and also the question of capacity and expertise delayed us in terms of the implementation. But I am happy to say this work then was carried over in terms of the quarter one of financial year 2023. Also, the security chapter, I remember there were a number of legislative pieces of work that had to be done that relate to the green paper on comprehensive social security, the refinements on its comments, and the cabinet memo was submitted. It was gazetted on the 18th of August in the previous financial year and was subsequently withdrawn, I'm sure. Honourable members will recall the whole issue surrounding this. The withdrawal was to allow us to provide better clarity, and many stakeholders misrepresented their proposals, especially on the National Security Fund and the fiscal implications. But I'm happy as well to report this work also has been carried over and is being continuous to be done in this current financial year. And also this the same as these two other pieces of legislation, which is about the fundraising legislation, which could not be completed, as well as the definition of the social bulletin, budget bulletin, which could not be published in the previous financial year. And all these three pieces of legislation and these targets, Chairperson, as I indicated, have been over in the current financial year, they will be concluded. The last pieces of work relate to various as well. There's a policy on, relating to the services to persons with disabilities. It was not submitted to cabinet as anticipated because we had to receive the executive buy-in and authorization to say yes, we can now table this at the social class at the cabinet for approval. But also other delays were just not only about not getting the executive on time buy-in, but also it related to us having to obtain this year's certification much later. And we only received this only in March, especially towards the end. And so it means we could not then be able to submit this to cabinet on time because those things have got specific time frames. For the methodologies on respite care services to families and persons with disabilities, they were not developed in the two provinces as we had planned, and it was essential for us to do this baseline survey to build a foundation on the data that should be useful in understanding the status of this, especially from those two provinces. So the coordination work with us to make sure that this is done in those provinces. There were some of the delays, and we had to catch up in the outer years. On the professional services, a potential draft bill was not submitted, as well due to the dependencies and for OSLA in terms of the chief state law advisor for this bill to be finalized. So as well, the tabling of the victim support services bill for in cabinet for approval. There were delays as well relating to OSLA in terms of getting their comments and recommendation because of the capacity issues internally at PSD at that time in terms of within the legal services. They were overstretched. There were lots of pieces of legislation, the Truth of Amendment Bill and so many others. That hence we had these delays for us, for them to be able to assist us. Relating to social policy, one of the targets that we wanted to have was to publish policy and develop and publish policy brief and this and disseminate it. And this was only done in April, which then means it was done within the period outside the fourth quarter. And finally, we have a target which is also carried over in the current financial year, which is about training of 92 municipalities on the integration of migration issues into the ITP. We couldn't conclude this during the fourth quarter because there were other competing priorities within municipalities, such as at that time, which is between January and March, municipalities are mostly busy with development of their IDPs. So it was just competing with that particular work. So, at the high level, we could not then achieve the targets that I've taken the honourable members through. And but as I did indicate, most of them have been included in the current APP, as well as there's been progress towards achieving them, although we could not do it at the time as you had reported. Now I'm moving to program one, and which starting with one of the targets. So now we're giving the details in terms of what is it that was achieved and where we are and the impact thereof. One of the targets relates to a program of strategy and change management. We had planned to develop a DFD sector APP that is aligned to the overall social sector strategy. And this was aligned. And we have made sure, Chairperson, in terms of our plans, making sure that they are aligned with regard to the BRRR that we received, making sure that our targets are able to respond to the issues that honorable members will raise. They are aligned to what the SONA is saying. They are aligned to the MTSF. They are aligned to the Minister's Performance Agreement. So all that continuum then becomes part of including our priorities as a plan, as a sector. So make sure that our plans are smart and making sure that they're aligned in that regard. And we want to make sure that as we develop this, we have a very clear strategic plan which clarifies even the roles and responsibilities and making sure that it contributes towards our mission as well as the impact that we want to make in terms of improving the quality of lives of our people. On MAE, there were two targets. One relates to the evaluation. All the members will recall that during the COVID, when we're providing the services in terms of the food distribution model, there was a hybrid at some point in terms of the food parcels as well as the voucher. So what the department wanted to do was then to conduct an evaluation, come up with an evaluation report so that it begins to determine exactly which of these models works much better and faster, and if then you need to combine them or not as well. So we've been able to come up with a feedback report in that regard. We're able to produce it as we are doing the evaluation of this hybrid model. The second target relates to what we have presented even in the previous financial year, which is a three-year project on the department developing for the first time a digital and electronic M&E system for selected social development programs. And in terms of what we wanted to achieve in this quarter was to develop that system for selected, and we were happy to report that indeed that has been achieved. And we are doing this, Chairperson and other members, to make sure that this electronic M&E system will enable us as a department to collect what is called the routine service delivery performance information, not just at provincial, but also at district level. And so that we are able to improve data so that we are able to we use that data to target, improve implementation, as well as making sure that we are able to make timely decision from automated and standardized database. On the finance, there were two targets. One has already been achieved because it's related to obtaining a qualified office, and this has already begun in Q1 and Q2, which we have already presented to this August committee. And the second part relates to our target on reduction of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So during the period under review, the department has been able to produce quarterly reports. One relating to irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. On irregular expenditure, there were about What there was one case which amounted to about 1,435 that was recorded. And in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there were 22 cases, and the amount is just over 105,000 that were recorded by end of the first quarter. So these are still the processes towards making sure that we are able to meet the targets of a 3% reduction in relation to these areas that I pointed out. On donor coordination and stakeholder management, we wanted to continue implement then the strategy that we have developed. And implementation of the strategy also involved us engaging with various stakeholders, which will include even international development partners such as UNICEF. So as a department, we participated in transition to explore other ways of strengthening this particular strategy. But also, it also entails some of the work that we'll call the public participation, which will be led by our political principals, both the DM and the minister, in terms of engaging with some of potential donors and other prominent business people around communities, so that we're able to augment some of the funds and begin to assist. And some of the lists, as well as we'll see it here, include some of the work that has been done by both the Minister and the DM in making sure that we are able to augment the resources and be able to assist in terms of improving our impact as government, and making sure we are able to work with our stakeholders. On human capital, there are just two areas which will then take me to conclusion, Chairperson. One relates to our commitment to continue with to monitor the implementation of what is called the skills audit outcomes, and this is done in the sector. So by end of this period, which is between January and March, the National Department continued to receive quarterly reports from the provinces, and these have been presented in the Human Resource Capital Forum, where all the HR heads meet and sit and discuss some of these particular issues. So during the period under review, we're able to receive that. Also, Chairperson would recall and other members that for us to deal with issues of unemployed social workers, the department had then developed a sector strategy for the employment of social service professionals. And now this is being implemented in the current financial year. But what we wanted to do was to make sure that this is tabled and discussed in various forums. And this was done in particular during February and March, which included our ExCo, it included our management committees, a forum where all the heads of social development sit. But also, not only that, it also found itself in the agenda of all of our MINMEC, which is a meeting of our minister leading into from all the provinces. So the strategy has then been properly contracted and it's been approved at the level of MINMEC. And the on program two is a very straightforward one, chapter in other members, because it's about making sure that the SASA is able to pay these grants, and it means us providing access to SASA, which in this quarter it was a total of about 74.7 billion. So that we are able to make available for SASA, so that it's able to carry its mandate in terms of administering and payment of social grants to different beneficiaries. And we do, as you see in this slide, provide in terms of the breakdown on monthly basis. So in Jan, it was about 16.15 billion. In February, it went up to about 29.2. And in the last month, which was March, it was about 29.3. And by us providing this the grants, there is, of course, evidence that continues to be generated, showing that through these grants, we're able to contribute towards especially for children, their educational outcome, and making sure also that their nutritional status gets improved because they're able to access food. So we feel that most effective mechanism available for government and that we are able to use to cushion millions of our people who are vulnerable and those coming from dire socioeconomic conditions as occasioned and exacerbated by other impacts such as COVID-19 and so forth. So Chairperson, that's where I will stop and allow my colleague, I think Mr. Anthony Magoranit, to take us through then program three, which looking at the various policies and administration and legislation that have committed to, some have already alluded to, that were met, not met in the previous financial year, but this, the list of them that you will take us through. Anthony, over to you, through your chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister and Honorable Members. From Program 3, Social Security Policy and Administration, yeah, as Acting DDG Taban Buthelezi said, we do have policies and legislation that are at different phases. And in terms of the Green Paper, as already indicated, it was developed, gazetted, and later withdrawn. The priority, however, has been to refine some of the contentious issues that we noted when the paper was gazetted. For example, the issue of the contributions which were interpreted to be some additional tax, whereas it will be the contributions are meant to ensure that you are eligible for some benefits while you are still working. The institutional matters are also included in those environments. In terms of the policy on linking children grants beneficiaries to government services, the policy was revised and stakeholder consultations were done, for example, with the National Child Care and Protection Forum, and also with the grant beneficiaries as well as the provincial Department of Social Development. The consultations consultation of draft policy on integrating children's grants beneficiaries with government was completed. In terms of maternal support policy, it was revised and stakeholder consultations were conducted. Also with that National Child Care and Protection Forum. This is critical as part of the policy development. In terms of the policy proposal for income support, it was reviewed and also finalized with the stakeholder consultations conducted, and also a consultation report was compiled. And just to indicate to honorable members that this is the work that we are doing in terms of basic income support for this gap that we have in terms of social security coverage in the country. In terms of the consultation on the discussion paper on the draft SASSA amendment bill, it was conducted with a number of stakeholders, including social civil society organizations, as well as research institutions. This was intended to ensure that the governance aspects within the SASSA environment is attended to. So in terms of policy on voluntary cover, this relates to informal sector workers and atypical workers, primarily those who do have irregular incomes that fluctuate. So the draft policy paper was developed and consulted with informal sector workers in Mpumalanga. More could have been done, but due to COVID restrictions, it became a bit difficult, but we managed to have some of those consultations, as DG indicated, that we had to come up with innovative ways to ensure that at least we make some movements in these policy areas. Next slide, please. Now, honorable members, when we look at these policy areas that we are dealing with, one may be asking, what is the impact or what is the intended outcomes of why we are doing all these policy areas? Social Security, honorable members, you recall that it's a constitutional obligation. Therefore, as a department, we have the mandate to ensure that we come up with measures that will ensure that everyone is covered. And in a nutshell, the Social Security in the country and internationally, it's a human right, and our approach is to ensure that we do have a life cycle approach when we deal with social security or social protection. Hence, the work on the green paper begins to give us that framework that ensures that there's adequate coverage and adequacy of social security benefits. And also, we need to ensure that our institutions, they are responsive and coherent to ensure that there's coverage through coherent policy making and equitable financing. The policy on linking children grants beneficiaries to integrate social welfare services, education, health within the cash card transfer context through improved access and cooperation alongside economic support. So this is the whole issue about ensuring that there is integration and a full package of benefits that are linked. The maternal support chair will integrate the relevant systems from key departments such as Department of Home Affairs, Health, Basic Education, particularly on the ECD and Education, the DSD, Employment and Labor Department, as well as SASA. And essentially, this is what Minister was indicating to say, the work that we do, we need to work and we work with other departments. Therefore, this policy area brings that linkage of pregnant women to comprehensive social security package to contribute to the ongoing development of the linkages between services provided by us, a social development, as well as the rest of government. The income support policy work will expand the social safety net to this vulnerable group, while ensuring that there's improved targeting of government services that will assist in empowering social grant beneficiaries. As I indicated, governance issues are always part of the work that we need to do within government and with the entity SASA within the social development sector. The SASA Amendment Bill then seeks to address those governance weaknesses in the current legislation to enhance the supervision and oversight of SASA to ensure that the legislative intent of social assistance framework is achieved. That is the critical aspect of addressing governance issues. In terms of social assistance appeals, Chair and Honorable Members, the quota four target was to adjudicate 70% of appeals within 90 days. And in this quota, I can report that the tribunal adjudicated 97.96% of appeals. In other words, that is 1,588 out of 1,621 appeals within 90 days. And obviously, honorable members, the intention here with the tribunal or their social assistance appeals is to provide an effective and efficient and accessible social assistance appeal service for applicants and beneficiaries of social assistance. This is to ensure that there is constitutive access to the constitutional right to administrative justice by ensuring that administrative decisions taken by SASA in relation to the grant applications or reviews are timeously reviewed by the tribunal, the independent tribunal, to ensure that it was lawful and reasonable and procedurally fair. So we have achieved more than what was targeted. In terms of the Inspectorate for Social Assistance, Chairperson, the main target was to develop an audit report on phase two of social assistance grants payments model. And we can report, Chairperson, that the report was completed. And in the context of this work within the Inspectorate, it is to ensure that there's maintenance of integrity of social assistance frameworks and systems. Next slide. So that was the end of our presentation from Program 3, Chairperson, and would like to stop here. Thank you so much, DDG. Acting DG Butele is over.
Thank you, Anthony. Chairperson, through you, we are moving now to the Program 4, and there are different, because the acting DDG Isabella, as DG indicated, that we had to split, she's with the other portfolio as well on the appropriation. Let me ask them, the colleagues from welfare who have been asked to talk to these issues. First one relates to early childhood development, children's education and families. Maybe in order to save time, colleagues, Chairperson and other members, one could be able to assist here. I think there were a number of interventions that the department has been implementing within the space of children, insofar as CCD, the children's legislation, as we understand that it was only on the 1st of April. That the handover of the ECD function was handed over to the PPE in particular. So there were high level achievements insofar as these programs, and this included the national quantitative workshop that was conducted insofar as the draft regulation on the Tourism Amendment Bill and the consultation report was developed in that regard. Also, what we did during the quarter four, we were able to develop the draft ECD quality assurance and support system as part of in preparation for us to hand over this particular function. And there were monitoring reports that were developed in terms of the ECD compliance and standard operating procedures. This is insofar as making sure we understand that this we are coming from the COVID-19. So we have to make sure that we develop these SOPs so that we are able to monitor the compliance of all our ECDs with regards to the COVID-19, making sure in terms of their the systems that they are putting in place that are able to comply with them. So we came up with SOPs. We will also continue to produce quarterly monitoring reports so that we are able to determine the number of children that are accessing our ECD services. So we're able to receive this from different provinces, and this is against the target of making sure that we are able to increase by 5% the number of children that are accessing quality ECD services. Also, during the product review, we are able to produce a report on the implementation of plans on the registration of ECD services, and these were received from various provinces. And this is a big line in terms of making sure that we continue to monitor the registration of ECT services. Also, in this period, we're able to revise the white paper for families, and we're able to consult it with the three provinces, namely the Northwest Gauteng, as well as the province of the Western Cape. Of course, this comes with various impacts that you wanted to have, but in the main is about making sure that we improve and increase the access of our children to ECD services relating to the bill, to making sure that we give effect to the authorization of this bill, that will make sure that we are able to address the gaps in the delivery of children's services. Insofar specifically, as you know, Chairperson has been working very hard in this regard within the foster care system, which is one of our biggest challenges that we have. On the HIV/AIDS, one of the targets that we have annually, we targeted to capacitate 300 social service professionals on the psychosocial service support guidelines. And during this period, then we break down per quarter, 300 is the annual target, but in this quarter, we had only targeted 50, but this was overachieved at 64. social service professionals were trained in this regard. Because Limpopo province brought more officials than we had planned to have them, and we were able to accommodate them within the budget, and because the number was not quite huge. I think we wanted also to report on the legislation that has been developed insofar as professional service work targets attempt to reduce poverty, and this includes the finalization and implementation of the white paper for social development against the annual target. So the social development legislation will provide a unified system to guide us in terms of the provision of a comprehensive integrated rights-based and resource quality social development services. What we have also done as a department was to make sure that this work leads, as we recall, of course, we've been reporting against it in terms of the draft social development bill. And this has been consulted with higher institutions of learning, as well as the council that exists for social service professionals, as well as the professional boards. And we are doing this against the consultation report that we have committed as our annual target. And this bill seeks to provide an inclusive and responsive social development system that comprehensive to response to all the needs of our South Africans. There were a few targets that we had as well under Program 4 relating to social crime and anti-substance abuse. One of the targets was about education awareness campaigns. And during the period under review, we were able to conduct our education awareness campaign in various institutions of higher learning. We visited 17 campuses, which included various TVET colleges, and the breakdown is provided in various areas in different provinces, including Free State, KZN, Limpopo, as well as Gauteng, and we're able to target some of these particular areas. We also continue to implement our universal treatment curriculum, and there were two public treatment centers that were able to be visited. One is the Swartfontein and the treatment center, and the other one is Julius Park in KwaZulu-Natal in Durban. Also, within this program, we continue to build capacity of the provision of social support services and the infrastructure policy insofar as issues relating to social services, so that we are able to implement our space insofar as the national strategic plan in the fight against gender-based violence and femicide. And there were specific hotspots that we are able to cover during the period of review. And these hotspots are found in the Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, the Limpopo, Gauteng, as well as the Free State. And of course, these are some of the desired outcomes, and it's what we have reported to, but so that we are able to save time, Chairperson, now and over. This is our last program, and Peter Nishipale will take us through in terms of the work relating to the NPOs, social policy, as well as development.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, and Minister and colleagues. The Program 5 relates to these 7 programs that we have, which is Special Projects and EPWP, Poverty Elevations and Sustainable Livelihood and Food Security, and also the Social Mobilization, Youth Development. The bigger one is the NPO Registration and the Compliance Monitoring. And lastly, the NPO Funding Coordination at National. With regard to the special project, we had one target that we focused on, which relates to the creation of the 175,000 EPWP work opportunities. And I think we have overachieved that. And the impact of that is that the program, remember, focuses on skills development and providing work opportunities by giving the youth, unemployed women and youth, access to temporary work, and which I think as some of the things that we do, you hear on the framework that you develop, is to make this what they have as permanent as possible. The second one was the issue, the social policy. They had one, we had one target to develop and disseminate one policy brief, which we did very successfully. This helps us to be able to be in line with the new developments in the country and what is happening even globally in terms of the policy brief and the dissemination of that. The under poverty alleviation, we had about three targets, which was to the issue of the food security. You remember we have got a plan that we are implementing in all nine provinces, where we have got over 235 CNDCs. So what we've planned was to provide a report on the implementation, and we achieved that. The issue of the capacity building on the framework. We developed a framework on linking the beneficiaries. One of the beneficiaries of social protection is the same one that I've mentioned in the EPWP. Here we would like to have to link them to new economic opportunities that it comes in, create sustainability amongst the youth, women, and people that are unemployed. And so what we were doing is just to build capacity in provinces on the target. And then we also review our sustainable livelihood toolkit, which is a framework that is going to be presented that we have done. All this is done to ensure that we look after the poor and vulnerable people as a way of empowering them and ensuring that they are sustainable. With regard to the community development, there were three targets that we have. One was to develop the development of the national community development policy that other government departments have requested us to do. That has been developed, refined, consulted during the quarter. We also had to train community development practitioners on a variety of things. We have got a community development practice policy. We've got other methodologies that we keep provinces abreast that on the new approaches on developing communities. One of the things that was to do was to train them, and then we train. And then on community mobilization and empowerment, it was finalized. This framework is one of the frameworks that fit well into the first national community development policy, wherein communities need to be mobilized. They need to be talked to. They need to be dialogued. They need to be directed in terms of identifying some. And also, this act as some of the prevention approaches that we have on the ground in terms of preventing some social ills and things that happens within communities. The youth development, we developed a policy. The target for this quarter was, it's not quarter one, it's quarter four, was that we build, we provide capacity on how provinces should implement the policies that have been developed, looking at strategies that they can use to ensure that when this financial year started, they begin to look at how they're implementing, and we develop the monitoring of that. We achieved that. The nonprofit organization registration and compliance monitoring and funding, this is one of the biggest areas that we used to. We were we developed the policy framework following the delay on the approval of the NPO bill. The in terms of our MTSF plan, a policy framework need to be developed to look at that, looked at a variety of things in terms of that. And the consultation during this quarter took place in seven provinces. successfully. We also have a national, it's called sector funding policy. This policy assists provinces on how to fund the nonprofit organization. The policy was developed a long time ago, but what we are doing is to develop the guideline. Oh, this is a very contested terrain, as you know. Funding of the nonprofit is very terrible in terms of everybody wants to be funded. So the policy guides in terms of how they could be funded and how we should make sure as national that when we fund these NPOs, we transfer funds in time for them to deliver the services that we have, and we achieved that. The other ones was that we develop a mentorship program, a model for the country. You will realize that in the NPO sector, we have got over 256 NPO registered on the system. And these NPO, some are new, some are old. So what we ought to do as the regulator of the nonprofit is to ensure that we capacitate the upcoming NPOs that are registered so that they know, especially with regards to the governance issues, that they are supposed to be knowing how the NPOs need to behave in terms of the NPO Act, which is a legislation that governs them. So the mentorship model talks about bigger NPOs taking charge of the smaller NPOs at a ratio of 1:10 in one jurisdiction area, and ensuring that all the NPOs are taken on board in terms of issues of governance. We also had a target of registering NPOs, and I think it will be much more visible as we go to the next slide, that in the fourth quarter, what it means, this what measures is that NPOs apply or community-based organizations apply to become an NPO, to be licensed. So we receive these applications, process them over a period. The Act requires us to register this within 2 months. We received over 6,000 NPOs application, and we processed 6.3, and they were processed within 2 months, and out of those 3.6 were registered, meaning if you minus from the process to the registration, this is a percentage of them that don't comply, which is, we could say, is a percentage of the failure, because it's not guaranteed that when you apply, you will. Some of the people have a criminal record. Some of them, they want to do something else which is not in line with the law. So they will not be approved, but we have approved that. The second part is that once you are registered, you are required to submit a report. Out of 256, the submission of report is a little bit poor. I think due to COVID is low. But this quarter, we received about over 10,000 reports, and we processed 9.7, which is, and then that was done within 2 months, as stated in the Act, is about just above 8. What is required here is that the reports from the NPOs need to reach yearly, according to the year end of each NPO, they need to submit it to the department, and they are scrutinized, and the NPO get what you call a compliance letter, which is required in any instances. When they are getting funding, they need to have to be compliant, and this is one of the compliance procedures that they need to comply with. Thank you very much, and back to you. This, I think, the summary of the expenditure was done as the first by the acting CFO. Thank you very much, Chairperson and members.
Chairperson, that has brought us to the end then of our presentation of the Q4. And we can now hand over to you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, department. Can we then give over to the honorable members to interact with the presentation? I see the hand of Honorable Fandameva and Honorable Bridget and Honorable Alex. Then we'll follow Honorable Stock and Frank. Can we start, Honorable Fandameva?
And Mareche, sorry to interrupt, and Honorable Mareche.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the ADG and to Mr. Buthelezi and the others for this presentation. I think I would like to start off by congratulating them on finally being able to get the monitoring and evaluation tool up and running. And also it looks like they are doing good work in terms of keeping their fruitless and wasteful expenditure low. And I'm hoping those numbers will remain like that and not increase in subsequent reports. That being said, I want to go to slide 14, which speaks to the fact that they have submitted a draft sector strategy for the employment of social workers to MINMAC, and this was tabled in February, March 2022. So this was earlier this year. Now, just last week or the week before, we saw a very significant development, and that was that many of our unemployed social workers marched to the union buildings. They did so because they were highlighting the plight of 9,000 social workers that remain unemployed. They were speaking about a department that is not assisting them, that is not hearing their pleas and plights. And so I would really like to ask, what is the content of the strategy that you're alluding to, and how is it different from the other plans and strategies that you have tabled to this portfolio committee before? And I would like to know, how will the strategy ensure that the ensure the employment of the 9,000 unemployed social workers? On slide 20, we speak of a policy linking children's grants to a basket of other services. We speak about a maternal support policy that will integrate systems and that will give pregnant women access to a comprehensive social protection package. But I want to know, what are these time frames for finalizing these policies? Because I feel like we mentioned these policies each time we meet, but there seems to be no movement on these. So I would really like to know what are the challenges in finalizing these policies. I would like to know, with regards to entity oversight, I heard Mr. Buthelezi saying a model was developed but not implemented. This is something that the AG keeps on talking about, that there needs to be an increased level of oversight by DSD over its entities, and I need to understand why there's no movement in this regard. In terms of program one, there was an over expenditure of 50.4 million. Classified as unauthorized expenditure, and this was with regards to them not able to get a reimbursement from SASSA with regards to the communications for the COVID grant. Now, it seems that they are spending 3 million rand a month on a hotline or a call center. I just need clarity in this regard. Why are you unsuccessful in being able to recoup those money? And is this three
Chairperson, Chairperson, please, my sincere apology. Can I, through you, Chair, can we request that members help us and not be too quick with the questions, because we need to note them down and then be able to respond properly. My apology, Honorable Fandameva, through you, Chairperson. We try to catch the questions, but when they're too fast, we're not able to grasp them properly.
I'm so sorry, Minister. I just don't want the chairperson to tell me my time is up. So I'm speaking a bit fast. Do you want me to go back to the start, or have you been able to get some of the questions?
No,
through
not chairperson,
no,
through you, Chair.
Through you,
Chair. Not to go bad, but just to request all members. I'm not saying they must be very slow, but they must also consider we noting, we have to write the questions in order for us, and we're quick in writing, but they must not really go too fast that we lose the questions.
Okay, now through you, Chairperson, thank you very much to the Minister for that intervention. I do know that I do speak a bit fast, so that is definitely noted, and I don't have many more questions. So I just wanted clarity on the issue of the 3 million rand a month for the toll-free hotline or the call center, and why those monies are not being recouped from SASSA. I think lastly, I want to ask, you know, the ADG mentioned SMART principles, and it did, and then the slides, subsequent slides, speak about issues around substance abuse prevention programs. It speaks about children's services. In other words, it talks about a finalized pilot report with regards to early intervention services to vulnerable children. It speaks about conducting awareness programs against GBV at institutions of higher learning, as well as capacity building at certain hotspots on GBV. But my question really, again, becomes the issue of what we see on paper here looks good, but the outcomes for me are not measurable, and it doesn't translate into action on the ground. We are currently now, again, faced with a rise in GBV. We know that reports are suggesting that substance abuse are on the increase, even amongst children. We know that police reports indicated that about 2,000 children were victims of physical assault last year alone. So my question is, do you think that these interventions that you're putting here on paper derive the necessary impact on the ground? Are they bringing about the change, in other words, that we really need? And so, in other words, are these plans that we've got, are they successful or not enough, or is there a need for us to review some of these plans? That's really my question, because I tend to be puzzled in terms of what we are presented in the committee in terms of progress, like I said, which looks good. But when you go to the ground, we see a rise in all of these social ills. And it seems that we are somewhat reactive in terms of addressing social ills. And then lastly, of course, we spend a large amount of our budget on the SRD grant. Recently, there was a report to the select committee with regards to delayed payments in August. And I just wanted to get an update in this regard. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Can we go to Honorable Masango?
Thank you so much, Chairperson. And thank you to the department for the presentations this morning. My question, before I ask my question, Chairperson, I just seem to remember, because I am mindful of the fact that I might have a lot of questions, but I seem to remember at some stage we were meeting with the department in the old assembly, and there was an undertaking, and I include myself in this undertaking for not having followed up, but there was an undertaking that we would try as the committee to meet with the department outside of the program of a meeting like today, just to workshop one another so that we are empowered as public representatives when we go to our constituencies, to be able to just speak from an informed position in terms of discussing these issues, that in a meeting like this, we have to be mindful of the time, but also we have to stick to some kind of a, you know, question asking thing, and then there would be answers, and then that's it, because we do not have time in a meeting such as this one. So that is what I would just like to ask, that we reconsider that, because I really felt at the time, and I feel so now, more so now, that we have this presentation. But Chairperson, I would like to just thank the department for the presentation. as I said. And my first question is on slide number 8. It is the only slide that I was able to actually jot down as the presentation was ongoing. So following on with the other few questions, I will just be asking the questions. And my question there is, the slide is on the performance overview of services to persons with disabilities is the top topic, as it were. And I would like to know, how long have these targets been outstanding, and what effect that this has had on the beneficiaries of the services that would actually derive out of the work that would have been done here. And also, Chairperson, on this slide, for me, it is an indication of what we have almost experienced in the processing of the Children's Amendment Bill, where we've had to reset meetings because there is no capacity to assist us. And just wanting to say, on a general note, is this something that we need to be sort of appraised on, or is this something that needs to be taken up in Parliament to avail capacity of such functions as the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, because I see here that they were not available because they are busy with other things and things like that, because we cannot in good conscience actually sit here and say that things were not done because there was no capacity. So what happens to the beneficiaries that as the department and the committee are servicing on the ground? And also, Chairperson, my next question is that the ADG said in passing, but that for me was quite important what he said, when he said, I would just to be honest with you, I would some of these things are due to our own inefficiencies on as the department. And I would like to know then, if that is the case, what is being done to deal with those inefficiencies so that the targets that need to be met will be met. And I wanted to also commend the ADG for actually coming out clean to say, look, we are working, we are doing the best we can, but we are sort of having some inefficiency issues here. And the next one, Chairperson, I'm not going to ask a question on it because I will benefit from the response that goes to the question that was asked by Honorable Fandemeva, and it has to do with the MNE. And then, Chairperson, there was a slide that spoke to the development programs that are run for the department's officials. And I also, again, would like to commend that, because there seems, just on a general basis, there seems to be a huge need of continuous and almost intentional empowerment of officials with the things with the issues changing around this department and the sector, as it were. So my question was, how often are these programs run? And because there are huge issues that beneficiaries of this department are hit by when they go to offices of the department. And I am saying this because there seems to be people that are so helpful that you get this commendation from a member of the public to say, I walked into this office and I was received so well and I was assisted from start to finish. This is how much I spent in the office. And then you get the very next one that says, I was told that when I asked about my social grant, I was told that you should be lucky that you're actually getting a grant in the first place, and just rude and very, you know, combative and things like that. So one is very, very comforted by the fact that there are these development and empowerment programs that are being run to assist our officials who are working under extreme circumstances with the social ills that we are facing at the moment. And also, Chairperson, I wanted to ask about the appeals. I saw that the appeals target was almost met 100%. I think it was 97%. I would like to know if at this stage already we do have an indication of what the appeals are on in terms of which grants and you know what the appeals are about, because then that will take us straight back to how we are implementing the we are doing the work on the ground and how that can be assisted in order, because I don't know that we can be happy that there are many appeals. We are happy that they've been expedited, but surely we need to know what seems to be the problem and then deal with that. And then on the on slide 25, I didn't see the impact on that slide, and I don't think the presenter actually outlined what the impact on slide 25, which is the ECD slide, essentially, and I didn't see what the impact of the intervention was. And also on slide 29 and slide 30, which is social crime prevention. And Chairperson, my last question is on Mr. Nechpale was talking about training or empowerment programs or development programs that they are running in the education institutions. I just wanted to know, has any linking already happened, and do we have any indication of what impact we are having in ensuring that we're linking the beneficiaries to these programs that are run on social crime prevention? And also, Chairperson, my last point of just wanting to find out, even from the minister as she is here, is have we seen this? I believe it got out yesterday, that talks about the orphans of COVID-19. Someone seems to have done a research on how many orphans so far are orphans of COVID-19. I know that an orphan is an orphan. We shouldn't be even going to that, but I just wanted to know as it actually impacts the work of the department, if there is a research out like that, and if one could have access to it. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Alex, followed by Honorable Polnit.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues and the department and the minister. Chairperson, in the interest of time, I will not repeat the questions that were asked by former colleagues, but then move on to ones that perhaps weren't asked. Chairperson, in Program 1, the savings that the department had there, how much of those savings relate to the unfilled, you know, critical vacancies in the department? And I'm talking about, you know, the vacancy of the DG and the DDG for social welfare, et cetera. So, you know, how does that savings, you know, with regard to that critical vacancies, what's the relationship there? Then Chairperson, on slide 46, you know, what the department calls a saving that relates to the old age and child support grant, you know, I see it as a vulnerable senior and a vulnerable child not receiving, you know, a grant that they desperately need. So I'd just like to find out what is the amount that's been, you know, saved according to the department for those two category of grants. And then obviously they won't be able to do this one now, but perhaps in writing, if the department can please provide a list of the 22 cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Then Chairperson, I heard the presenter speak about the 235 CNDCs, and I'm sure we all have been reading the headlines of families skipping meals a day, skipping meals, and you know, not being able to put food on their table. And I'd just like to find out from the department within that community. I think it's what program 5, the community development for CNDC. What was then the underspending in that program? Because I'm of the opinion if we have people who are struggling to eat, there really shouldn't be any underspending in that program in particular. And let me just have a look here. And then Chairperson, something that I go on about all the time. I was once again on the department's website, and I've tried to type in youth program or youth project, and nothing comes up. And I'm just once again appealing to the department to please have a look at that website. It is a point of information for so many people trying to find out what the department's really doing, the projects that are on offer, the programs that are on offer. And when you type things into the search function, you just can't find anything. And then lastly, Chairperson, this one is just slightly off topic, but something I forgot to ask in the previous committee meeting when we were talking about the child support grant top-up. I'd just like to find out, because again, I was on the website trying to find regulations and I couldn't, and I'd misplaced mine. And does the new child support top-up grant, if the child is also now still in school and they're over the age of 18, will that top-up grant also stop? Because as we know, with the foster care grant, yeah, it goes up until the age of 21. So off topic, but does that thing grant also stop at 18, even though the foster care one would have gone to 21? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Alex. Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the slide that was given to us this morning. It was quite interesting, sorry, but what my colleagues are saying is true, and I was covered by most of them, because on the paper it looks so beautiful, but in practice it's not like that, because if you look at the problems that we're having in our community, Chairperson, is the drug abuse. Drug abuse is a very big problem, because drug abuse create where people, children go and steal to use the drugs, to get money to use the drugs. And I would like to know how many shelters do we have really in South Africa or in the different provinces. The same with the gender-based violence. The shelters for the women. How many shelters do we really have? Because the gender-based violence is a crisis where it's happening every second of the day. Like I said, I was covered by most of them. But then also I would like to speak about the people with disabilities. If you look at the people with disabilities, Chairperson, there isn't enough schools to host these children. There isn't enough. What discussion is the Department of Social Development having with the Department of Education about these children that don't have schools to attend to? I'm talking about myself, that is coming from the Free State. And then also, when you look at the disabilities, a lot of times parents are struggling because children don't even have a wheelchair where they are staying in the squat camp. And then we look at the funding. The funding was not spent on this thing of people with disabilities. And then if you look at the slides, they were saying that Free State were not one of the ones that got the oversight with the NPOs. When you go to the NPO office there in Mangaung, they will tell you, you know what, you are a new NPO, you're not going to get funding. In any case, they just need money for the old NPOs. So even though people want to start something, they can't. I know of some people, because I'm working with old age homes, where they don't get any funding. And when the social workers come in there to come and see what is the requirements, are they qualifying with the requirements, they are so rude to the people. I've been in one instance, I've been to an old age home when social workers were coming in to come and review the place. The lady have done everything they have asked of her, but still they are rude to her. I'm going to make sure you're not going to get funding, and you will see I'm going to close this place. But they are bringing the very same old people to that very old age home that must assist them, but then they are looking to the very same lady. And then also the food security plan that they were talking about, and the livelihood toolkit. How are we going to implement these things? Because like the first member was talking, Bridget was saying that we need to have a workshop, because there was such a lot of information in one go. You had to keep track and make notes of what it is that it is really important. And all these things were very important. And then they were also talking about the EPWPs. The EPWPs are being politicized. It's meant to be for the poorest of the poor. But if you belong to a certain party, you will get a position, get the opening there, the EPWP, and it is not for the poorest of the poor. So I'm just worried. Everything on that slide was so important. But if you look at the things and you look at the understanding and the not achieving, you ask yourself a lot of questions. But like the previous member was saying, I'm not going to repeat everything because it's going to take a lot of time. But I think we need time and space to discuss these things because it is important, and because we are working on the communities each and every day. And these are the things that the communities are asking us. But I want to say thank you for this presentation, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Song.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to my colleagues, the minister, as well as the officials from the department and everybody, all members who are also in the platform. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also start by joining my colleagues to appreciate the presentation, which we just received now from the department, which is quite detailed. And then we also want to appreciate that there are some serious levels of improvement when it comes to the funding, and then as it relates to how the department improves when it comes to funding on the APPs and the programs that they have budgeted for. That is quite appreciated. Honorable Chairperson, I've got just two issues which I want to raise. I think I've been largely covered by my colleagues who came before me, as well, in particular, Honorable Fanele Merwe, as well as Honorable Masango. I think they raised two questions which I also wanted to canvass. But before I move to the questions, I would like to just indicate, Honorable Chair, that during the beginning of the sixth parliament, and then we had a conversation, we had a workshop with the department, it's a portfolio committee, and then we even went to the extent where I think the minister also appreciated the fact that instead of us in the portfolio committee sitting across the road and criticizing and pointing fingers at the department, we are supposed to be part of the solution to improve on the work of the department, to hold the department accountable on the work that they are supposed to be doing. So that was quite a good initiative when we started. But I'm raising this issue because there are issues which are raising and then which we agree upon. And then the issues they reflect from time to time in the annual performance plans of the department. But if one needs to follow up and go back to those issues, you'll realize that those issues are just in missing, or they keep on to be just reflecting there, but they are not being implemented by the department. And then one of those issues, Honorable Chairperson, which I just want to remind ourselves about some of the issues that we agreed upon, but it looks like there's slight progress or less implementation when it comes to those issues. Is the issue of the 8.2 billion budget towards the NPOs funding. I mean, this is an issue where all of us in the portfolio committee, we continue to raise that there's huge money that goes to the NPOs, but we are not sure whether we are getting value for money, whether there's a cost benefit for the department and all of that. And also, whether the NPOs that are getting the funding on the ground, there's an impact or there's work that has been done, which is actually quite appreciated, or where we can feel that there's work that is happening on the ground. I think this is an issue that we have been complaining and lamenting on it. The minister also in the portfolio committee. I can't even remember how many times the minister raised this issue with us in the portfolio committee. So it will be quite appreciated if we just can get an update from the department as to how far we towards making sure that just to check whether we are receiving there's cost benefit analysis or this impact that has been done on the ground with such a huge amount of money being spent on the NPOs. And then my second issue, which is the last one, Honorable Chair, I think partly was also raised. It's with regard to the M&E. I think we need to appreciate that when it comes to the monitoring and evaluation, there's huge progress that has been made with regards to the issue of evaluating, getting the data on a daily basis, monitoring also in terms of funding or the programs of the department, which is quite appreciated. But I just want to also raise this issue and follow up on it on the, I think it was on slide 11 on the presentation around the digital monitoring and evaluation system for the DSD sector. This issue has also been reflecting on the APP that's been coming, but I think there's also less progress with regard to implementation. So I would like to appreciate just an update as to what is happening, where are we, or maybe these issues have no longer been prioritized so that we are taking into confidence as a portfolio committee. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Those are my issues. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Stock. Honorable Aris.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. That's always the thing when you speak loud. Everybody has covered your point. Good morning, Minister. And thank you for the presentation. Mine is just short on Voldizo from America. We touched on that. Recently, we have seen about 150,000 children was left as orphans due to the fact that the parents have passed away, or people that have looked after them have passed on, which means ultimately that these children will then become reliant on the child foster care ground. And we have seen recently with the shortage of social workers, and even, we have seen the strike action there, the union building. I want to find out how will the department accommodate these children. And then also on in terms of the CNDC. Can you hear me? I'm still want to hear.
There's a background.
How many?
Can you hear me? I just want to find out from the department in terms of the CNDCs, is there an exit plan so that we don't keep people reliant on the CNDCs? Is there development plans at all the CNDCs? Are there plans linked to the CNDCs to ensure that people exit this program? And then, Chairperson, I really want to concur with what Honorable Stock was saying, that we need a list from the NPOs who are getting funding from the department, how funding is distributed, and we also want to find out if there's a program in place that monitors the spending of the NPOs. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Aris. You were the last one. I think the hand of Honorable Fandameva is an old hand.
Yes, apologies, Chair.
Yes. Let me not waste time. Allow the department to answer the questions. There are too many for now. Department?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm sure but you'll be guided by the Minister. I'm sure she might want us to go first and then she comes up. The number, if that is okay with you, Honorable Minister. There are colleagues who need to board right now, and I want to allow them. This is relating to issues that have been raised on the issues of the policy work relating to comprehensive social security, including the appeals. So let's start with those colleagues. I know there's Dr. Maureen as well as Angela, if you could go first on the questions that have been asked by other members.
Thank you, Chairperson and my colleagues at DSB. Chairperson, from Program 3, we received three questions on maternal support and also the top-up grant as well as the appeals. So through you, Chairperson, I would like to request Dr. Maureen Mokosi to address the maternal support question on the challenges and the top-up grant. Then Advocate Antoinette Brink will address the question on appeals. Over to you, Dr. Mokosi, for the two issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Anthony. Good morning, members. Good morning, Chair. My questions are for, I'm going to answer the maternal support and linking policy work together because the processes are at the same level. Colleagues, we are currently consulting on the two policies. The reason why consultation is taking a bit longer, members and minister, is that it involves four other departments. So we need to obtain buy-in first before we approach Parliament. We are on the right track currently. We are intending to complete the consultation process of the two policies by the end of this financial year. So towards the fourth quarter, we will be starting with the process of preparing for approaching Parliament on the two policies. We did not want to approach you on half-baked products. We wanted to finalize the process, and then we are committed to the process of consultation being completed this end of the financial year, and we will be approaching Parliament next year. In terms of the policy on CSG top-up, the question was, does the policy end at 18, same as the child support grant? The answer to that policy is, to that question is yes, the policy or the grant ends at 18. Why? If members remember very well, during my presentation, I indicated that this is not a new grant, but it builds on the current child support grant. And because the current child support grant ends at 18, the new policy as well, the CSG top up, ends at 18. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other?
Advocate Brink on the appeals.
Thank you so much, honorable members, and thank you so much, Mr. Makurimiti. Thank you so much, honorable Masanda, for the question in relation to appeals. Just to indicate, and I think it's very important to state this, is that even though we all would like to see lesser appeals, I think it's important to note that the appeals process is specifically a guaranteed constitutional right where people who are in disagreement with the decision of SASSA have the right to actually request the independent tribunal to reconsider that decision in order to confirm whether that decision was lawful, was it reasonable, and was it procedurally fair. So the issue in relation to appeals is not necessarily whether a person will only be able to lodge an appeal where SASSA did something wrong. Our stats actually indicate that in 90% of all appeals, we actually confirm SASSA's original decision, thereby indicating and confirming that the decision was a reasonable one, it was lawfully, and it was also procedurally fair. However, because of the fact that the person can say, but I still disagree with the decision, people have the right to actually lodge their appeals. And just in relation to that, ma'am, it's important to see that 95% of all our appeals that we receive currently are actually medical-related appeals. So it means it's appeals in relation to disability grants, in relation to care dependency grants, and grants in aid. And what we've also seen in those instances is that in the majority of cases, the issue that is at hand is actually not necessarily a disability per se. However, people with chronic conditions that keeps on actually applying for the grant because they've got either diabetes or they've got diabetes together with high blood pressure, together with HIV, and then this means that they are, according to their own perception, or unable to work, and therefore they apply and continuously keep on applying for this grant. So perhaps from a policy perspective, it needs us to also start re-looking into perhaps together with the Department of Health, how do we deal with people with chronic conditions per se? Because in the majority of instances, those parents will not qualify simply because of the fact that their chronic conditions per se does not actually mean that that means that they will actually be disabled. However, y'all, that is more in relation to just the feedback on appeals. I hope that that answers some of your questions, ma'am.
Chairperson? Chair?
I'm sorry. Yes.
Hello.
We want to continue to respond. From our side, there was a question, Chairperson, that was asked by Honorable Stock relating to what the digital MNE system. Yes, colleagues would recall that indeed this is a 3-year project, and in the previous financial year 2021 we presented it. So it included number one to develop the system, but before developing the system there's quite a substantial work that you have to do relating to understand exactly what are available in existing systems within the sector, and that work then is called the SBIT report, which we have already concluded before we develop a system so that to understand the needs and what are the infrastructure elements and all the issues that are existing. The second part then developed then the system, and I'm glad to report that currently we a part of the components in the current financial year is that we are on course because we will be piloting the system in the 3 provinces. However, we are still missing some of the challenges in terms of the readiness of the provinces and also some of the assumptions that we might have made because of the complexity of what is happening, not just at the provinces. As I indicated earlier, this system, the data is collected not at province, but even from at a district level. But what was quite important, the exercise that we did as well was to say, it's always good to develop these systems, but what is important then is about the implementation. So we are working, of course, with the current service provider to come up with an implementation plan. And we understand the cost associated with it will be huge, but it's important that what the system is developed, that what it sends as a sector will be able to implement it. Because that requires, number one, consideration for the tools of trade in terms of how will data be collected, but also the capacity in terms of the data capturers themselves at both district and service point level. So these are some of the areas that the system needs to have, because it's good to have a system, but you need to consider what then becomes the dependency. So the cost in terms of the implementation will go and give detail to that particular extent. I think those are some of the issues, and the acting DG is best, but probably because one was here, one could give some guidance in terms of maybe I'll allow Ms. Gendaba to respond to matters relating to the implementation of the sector strategy for the employment of the social workers, especially in terms of the current and how it's different from other initiatives that has been done. And also there was a question which I'm not sure if the acting CFO will respond to in terms of the questions asked by Alexander, in terms of the savings and if there's any relationship between on the savings that you reported to on vacancies insofar as these other certain posts that are existing and so forth. So these are some of the areas, including the savings on the child support grant and the acting CFO here. And there were questions that Mantipi relating to the disability that should refer to, but also there were equally a number of questions that we asked relating to issues of substance abuse as well as gender-based violence, which Ms. Fiza would relate to, as well as issues of children. And then finally, it will be Mr. Nechipak. Through you, Chairperson, and then I know the minister is here, maybe she will conclude at the end. But let me allow Ms. Ndaba, followed by Ms. Nancy, Fiza, and children, as well as Mr. Nechipak. Thank you.
Thank you, Thabane. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members. The question by Honorable Van der Merwe about the content of the strategy. Let me first say this, that in 2018, Cabinet had taken a decision that all government departments must employ social service professionals. The experience, however, has been different in that by and large, the employment of social service professionals was seen as a project for the Department of Social Development. So what the strategy is doing, or basically, is to reinforce that very important principle. So we've engaged with a number of sector departments essentially to find to establish how they would use social service professionals in different sectors like correctional services, the justice sector, the police, basic education, home affairs, as well as local government COCTA. Now, that engagement culminated in a submission by all these departments, essentially indicating their needs, where exactly they are going to be using the social service professionals. The second element to it was that whereas before, the focus has largely been on social workers. The draft strategy for the employment of social service professionals is broadening the scope to look at the entire cohort of social service professionals. So we are not confining or limiting ourselves to the social workers, as it were. The third element, which is a critical element, is that we have taken it upon ourselves as a department to actually mobilize funding for the employment of social service professionals, even for the sector departments. We have taken this approach, we have taken this view, because our experience in the past has been that where money is given to the sector departments, they tend to prioritize their core services to the exclusion of what they consider to be non-core. In this instance, social service professionals. So we have said, therefore, this time round, we are going to submit a bid, which is essentially a joint bid, and that this money is going to be ring-fenced specifically for this purpose. So once the CFOs or this money is processed or is given to the sector departments, we will then be monitoring the sector departments, make sure that the money is used for what it was procured, so that we don't go through the same pain that we went through in the previous way. Money was procured for this and then it was used for something completely different. So that is essentially the main focus of the strategy. What is also important about the strategy is that we are also looking at the increase of social ills across the country, the nature of these social ills and target those social ills. And so the local government, especially the districts, are going to be one of our major beneficiaries in the recruitment and employment of these social service professionals. So this month, which is September, anytime from now, between now and end of the month, I cannot be specific because this is dependent entirely on National Treasury. We expect an answer or a response on the bid. Our total bid for the employment of these professionals is 9 billion rands. But in our engagement with National Treasury, the reception has been quite positive. Not only was it positive because you had a march, which was important to reinforce the point that we've been making, but because National Treasury appreciated that indeed we have challenges in the country, and unless we tackle them as such, we are going to be forced to react and deploy police, which is essentially reacting to a problem that has already taken place, as opposed to dealing with the problem before it becomes or it germinates to something very, very serious. Now, let me just deal with another question by Honorable Abrams with regards to the website. Let me first acknowledge the fact that our website has not been what it is supposed to be. The matter is currently before the PAC. We are going to be concluding on it because we've acknowledged that it is not user-friendly, that it is not technologically savvy. And once we're finalized on this, we will then process these issues and finalize so that those who are logging in from outside are able to do so with ease, and that all our services could then be advertised. And so I think those are the two questions from my side, unless Devon wants to add. No, he says he doesn't want to add anything. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ndaba. And there were questions relating to services to persons with disability. Mayor Mantik.
Thank you, Tabane. Good morning, Chair, Minister, and honored members. In terms of the question that was asked on disability, indeed, the policy took some time to actually develop, and now it's on its route to the social cluster. But I would also then like to talk about the development of the policy being a legacy project. And why I term it a legacy project is because at the time when the policy was actually presented before the social cluster, we were sent back as a department to actually wait for the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities to first be approved in cabinet, and then we can actually then start the process. But in the process of actually reviewing our policy meant that we needed to actually look at broadening the scope as outlined in the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. But as I said, the policy is on its route to the social cluster and cabinet. I'd also like the members to also take note of the fact that the services haven't stopped. Remember that the policy that we're currently looking at and actually developing, it's a review of our initial policy that the department has been using to actually provide services to persons with disabilities. Following our initial policy, we then developed the micro policies and the implementation guidelines. And this is what we are still utilizing to ensure that services continue to be provided at provincial level. We also then like to acknowledge the fact that yes, we have recognized following the ratification of the UN Convention that there are gaps in the policy that we developed. Hence, we are working tirelessly to make sure that the current policy can then be approved by Cabinet and can be legislated to ensure that we end up with the legislation on the services to persons with disabilities. And this will ensure that our services can be standardized, can be uniformed, and are able to adequately be resourced to make sure that they can respond also adequately to the support needs of persons with disabilities in rural areas, in our informal settlement, and those persons with disabilities who actually experience compounded marginalization. The second question that I want to respond to is the issue on the fact that there are children with disabilities who are out of school system and who don't have assistive devices. While the two recommendations are actually the mandate of the Department of Basic Education and Department of Health and Social Development, we do have a national forum that we work tirelessly with the two departments to ensure that once they've got the mandate to provide other services in terms of wheelchairs and ensure that children can actually then go to school, we also then provide the protection services to our children with disabilities through our provinces using the very policies, micro policies and implementation guidelines to ensure that services do reach our children with disabilities. Thank you, Tabana. I think I responded to the two questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mme Molamu, and I'll hand over to Mme Siza Mahangwe. There were a few questions on the issues of shelters, gender-based violence, as well as substance abuse. Over to you, Mme Mahangwe.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, minister and colleagues. Yes, there were questions around gender-based violence as well as substance abuse. The question was around what is the impact of the programs that we are implementing in addressing those social ills. I'll start with the gender-based violence. As a department, we do acknowledge that the issue of gender-based violence is an intersectoral matter, and it is led by the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability. However, as a department, we've got a responsibility as well. We are contributing, but it's not a matter that can be addressed by the department alone. For us to experience and overall impact or see a shift, all those key departments that are mandated to deal with this matter must implement those deliverables according to the national, the NST, which is the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. So we are implementing that, that strategy. It consists of six pillars. Out of those six pillars, there are three key pillars that we are focusing on as a department. The first pillar that is our responsibility is the pillar on prevention and social cohesion. As much as we are not leading it, it is led by basic education, but we do have programs that addresses social behavior change issues.
For instance, in our APP, we've highlighted one of the programs. There's quite a number of programs that we are doing, but we are reporting on this one, which is focusing on institutions of higher learning. We are targeting students because there's quite a number of universities that are experiencing high levels of gender-based violence. So we do have our prevention programs there. We also have early intervention programs because we realize that when we are dealing with the talks or when we're addressing prevention matters, immediately there's an increase in the number of students that need services immediately, and they also need counseling. So we are providing trauma counseling on site. We are also providing shelter services depending on what are their needs, but our services are comprehensive. It's prevention as well as immediate intervention in all those institutions of learning that we are currently doing. We've targeted 14, but because of the demand, we have more than that. There are other institutions that are already aware of the services that we are rendering, and they do from time to time come and call us for services. And then we are also focusing on men and boys, because we are saying for us to address the issues of gender-based violence, we cannot only work with women, but we need to make sure that men are on board and will break the cycle of violence by engaging them. So we do have programs that are targeting men and boys as part of the solution, which we did not allude to, but those are some of the key interventions that we are doing as far as the gender-based violence is concerned. And then for substance abuse, yes, the impact of the programs, we are also saying this issue of substance abuse is an intersectoral matter as well, because in terms of the National Drug Master Plan, there's more than 10 departments that are mandated to address alcohol and drug abuse in the country. As a department, we are there to coordinate, but at the end of the day, each and every department that is listed on the National Drug Master Plan, it is expected to deliver on issues of substance abuse so that as a country, we are able to cap the abuse of alcohol. And as a department, together with the sector, we have been working with MRC because it's important that our interventions are evidence-based. So we've been working with MRC to receive data and understand exactly what is it that we are trying to address. And from that research, it has indicated to us that we have serious problems of underage drinking as a country. We have problems of more young people that are drinking. We have problem of access to alcohol. We have problem of, advertising, which entices young people. So the research is very broad. It has listed all the challenges that we have in the country, so that when we come up with interventions, we know that we are addressing the real problem. We are not all over the show. So this is what we have received. And based on the recent, province challenges that we've experienced as a country, we came up with developed a program of action. And that program of action is on its way to cabinet, where we want all these the immediate things to be addressed. One of them is the poor regulation of alcohol. We said it needs to be addressed immediately so that we can be able to really, manage the problem better. And then secondly, we are also saying the issues of taverns, both illegal and legal taverns, they must be addressed with immediate effect so that we can save lives. And we are also saying the issue of, access to alcohol must also be addressed. So all these issues that we have highlighted through our program of action, it is the responsibility of DTIC. Like I said, that this matter is an intersectoral matter. So we are hoping that the DTIC will lead and ensure that they are tabling their liquor amendment bill with immediate effect to address all the challenges of alcohol. Then from the department side, lastly, we are also focusing more on, we are scaling our prevention program as well as the treatment. So, but on our APP, we have reflected a lot of work that we're doing around treatment, which is the UTC. We are saying it is important that we increase access to services, because a lot of people want to access the treatment centers. So
by working with the treatment centers, making sure that the kind of the programs that they are implementing are of quality and they can even guarantee success, then it will increase access and it will make sure that those who have gone through the program, they don't come back or they don't relapse, but they are further reintegrated into our communities. And lastly, we are also acknowledging that the prevention programs that we are doing for both gender-based violence as well as substance abuse are long, they've got long-term returns. It's not going to, we won't be able to see the results now, but we begin to see the impact of the prevention program through the immediate early intervention programs that we do, because there's an increase on our services and there's a demand for our services is because of the work of the prevention work that we started. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. May I then allow Mayor Melissa Tse Kiso to take on the matter of the situation?
Chaba? Hello.
Yes.
What are you saying right now? Whom are you giving?
Mr. Nitipale, and then we'll come back to issues related to this. Mr. Nitipale.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Tavani and Chairperson and honorable members and the minister. There are a few questions asked in relation to the NPO funding, food security, especially the CNDCs by Honorable Alexander, Honorable Marais, and Honorable Stock on the issue of the cost-benefit analysis that we need to deal with. Thanks very much for those questions. I think the first one is that We have seen in terms of food security, this is a moving target. Initially in 2019, we had the number of households prone to hunger was about 11.8% in the country. And the number of individuals that are prone to hunger was about 13.8%. But due to COVID, that has increased to 25% of the people in the country are now prone or vulnerable to hunger and food shortages. So with the 235 CNDC that we have, actually, honorable members, you are right, I think there is not enough. So what we have done is to look at increasing the CNDCs, especially in the areas that have been affected, and the new areas like in the informal settlement area. There was a question in relation to whether the underspending. We only had one underspending on the food security that was in Eastern Cape, and I think the honourable members are aware, where they could not transfer the legal money they have, which was meant for to feed the poor and vulnerable people in that area. And then with regard to the CNDCs and the feeding, it is not just feeding and we are not creating dependency. It is called Community Nutrition and Development Center. It has got a development arm on it. We develop a framework in 2019. The framework is that those people that go and eat in that area must be skilled, must be trained to do something so that the sustainable livelihood programs, we can find one of the example, I think is just that it might be far from Cape Town, but in Limpopo, we had a very good CNDC with a development arm. And youth and develop, they come there, they do bakings, they sell. So it's one of the things that need to implement the programs that we have. And we have succeeded in ensuring that not everyone who comes and eat just come, eat and go. They need to begin to, they are being capacitated and they are assisted and developed to do agricultural farming next door, wherein we create market for them. So I think that is in cognizance that they should, CNDC should not be create dependency amongst our own people. The issue of the NPO funding, and I think honorable member shared the experience in the state in terms of the fear. Indeed, there's several studies has been done, and I've raised this. There's a number, we've got a number of NPOs that are registered that are not funded. I think it's based, it's due to the fact that I don't think we have got enough studies that were done by Treasury. The sector is underfunded completely. And in that study of 2018, it indicated that we are underfunded by 9.2 billion, for us to be able to fund equitably in all nine provinces. So it's a struggle, but in terms of how we are funding, the policy prescribes that the funding has to be done objectively. There should be call for proposals, and those applications are reviewed. It's a multi-year funding that we have proposed because this is very intense. You do a three-year funding and making sure that you fund the programs. All the programs that were described by CESAR and others, these are the programs that we have. They are run by the non-profit organization on the ground. They are doing quite a good job. We visited Free State for issue of substance abuse, and it was so impressive that we really make sure that, I think we are happy that the money that we are giving them, we have got value for. Honorable Stock asked the issue of the cost benefit analysis that we need to do. Yeah, indeed, even our minister have requested us to deal with that. We have finalized the development of the TOR and also the model in terms of how we need to deal with this, because it can be construed as if it's an impact study. Although we don't want to do impact study because they are costly, we will be doing a cost benefit analysis, whether there's value for money in terms of what we are funding. We are ready, and as we have developed and we have done all the necessary preparations, and it's just a matter of time that we, as a department, we will deal with that. The last questions were the issue of how these policies and the framework are implemented. And I think one of the things that we need to thank provinces and also thank the portfolio committee, and especially what we have asked, is that, remember, we run a concurrent function. We develop a policy that is implemented in a province. And one of our roles is to ensure that we capacitate those provinces that are implementing these policies. And also we monitor. I think one of the things that Tawani has mentioned is the monitoring of the implementation of the policy before it's reviewed after 3 years. So I think these policies are implemented very well. UNISA 2019 conducted a study on the development interventions that is taking place. It was in Mpumalanga. It has indicated that the little bit you ensure to develop communities, it has got a major impact. They measured the before and the after program implementation, and the results was very promising. It might not be enough because it's the amount of money that we have in provinces, but I think any development that we deal with or we do in collaboration with other government departments, it will bear the fruit in terms of us ensuring that we ensure that our citizens are catered for in all nine provinces. Challenges will be there, but I think the benefits are more than the challenges that we're experiencing in provinces. Thank you very much, honorable members, for guidance and leadership.
Thank you, Mr. Neshapala. The last two then there was a question asked by Mayor and honorable member Sabi on the offense that has been created
largely following the COVID-19.
Will you please come closer to the, excuse me, come closer to the mic? There's an echo behind you. So it's really, I don't know, I can't hear you, please.
I'm sorry, Honorable Chairman. I was referring back to the question that was asked by Honorable Mamasango and the offense that has been largely created following the COVID-19 pandemic. Let me allow Nelisa to respond to the Honorable Members. What is the sector doing in this case?
Thank you, DDG. Honorable Chair, in response to the orphans that have been created by COVID-19, I need to indicate that as the department, because we don't really have the magnitude, understand the magnitude in terms of how many orphans have been created by COVID-19, except those children that would actually, you know, come through the system as applying for foster care. And in that case, such children end up being placed in foster care. However, I need to indicate that the study that Honorable Masango is referring to is actually estimates that UNICEF also referred to that that study, that it's estimates based on how even the HIV and AIDS, you know, led to the creation of these huge numbers of orphans by HIV and AIDS. And such a process was also embarked on so that we can also look at how as the country we should respond to those orphans that could have been created by COVID-19. What I can indicate is that as the department, we are actually embarking on an audit which will assist us to identify where are those children, who is taking care of those children, and a thorough assessment being done so that we can understand if they are in need of care and protection, as it has been revealed that orphans do not necessarily become children that are in need of care and protection. Hence, even in the Children's Amendment Bill, we have amended that section 150 to give, you know, that a provision that orphans or abandoned children in the care of family members, they are not necessarily in need of care and protection. Hence, they will be channeled into the top-up grant. However, the audit that Honorable Chair that we are embarking on will assist us to know where are those orphans. And as part of that audit, we want to work closely with the traditional leaders, the churches, and committee members so that they can assist us in terms of identification of such children who haven't come to social development offices to seek for help. Thank you.
The last respondent before I hand over then Honorable Chair back to our acting PT because he has returned is the acting CFO. There were three specific questions asked to Mr. Yes.
Thank you, Tabani, and also thank you very much, Chairperson. So let me respond to the questions raised in terms of the comms for Program 1. Yes, indeed, we were mapping between us and SASA for SASA to pay the telecom account related to the toll-free number. The issue that SASA had was that it had to follow a procurement process. We ended up paying the toll-free number for the prior level for this for the prior financial year. The estimated cost for this account was in the region of 60 to 70 million. We've since engaged again with SASA. They've started the procurement process for this number to be taken over by them. We have an agreement that we will claim because we had to still continue to pay this account for this financial year. And we will claim whatever we have paid since April, we claim it back from them. So it's still a matter to be resolved between us and SASA for the specific in terms of Telkom. The savings on the COE, as I've indicated in the presentation, 50% of that relates to the inspectorate. We couldn't start to establish or start filling the post in terms of the inspectorate. It is, however, earmarked the allocation if we look at the work that's been given to us for the inspectorate. So that full saving is still under COE for the inspectorate. The other savings that we had, we're still battling with 2 years ago. The National Treasury has reduced our budget on COE with 225 million over 3 years. Now, it's got a significant impact on what we have available in terms of our COE ceiling. We have to go, we are busy to reprioritize all the posts because it's affecting almost 75% of our vacancies currently in terms of this. If we overspend on COE, if you regard as unauthorized expenditure, so some of the savings that you see on COE relates to more staff because turnover. There were people that were fortunate enough to retire, but there was also people that was promoted to other departments and other institutions. But we are busy looking at balancing the available budget versus what is our priority posts going forward, because we have got a 3-year allocation. Our allocations for the next 2 years is actually decreasing. So whenever we fall now, it's got an impact on the other 2 years, and we need to ensure that we stay within the COE ceiling. The other matter is the regular expenditure. Yes, there were regular expenditure, but it was related to non-compliance of certain procurement processes. Some of the things that were picked up in the findings was that we didn't do 3 quotations. Some of the service providers were tax compliant. But all the things in terms of regular expenditure was no loss to the state. We have received the service, the goods were delivered. So there was no loss to the state, but it's regarding regular expenditure that we've made a case to the National Treasury to condone this expenditure because we provide evidence that there was no loss to the state in terms of the certain compliance requirements. And we're waiting National Treasury outcome of this. Chair, I think those were the 3 ones to be addressed by myself. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much, CFO, for the responses. I thought that, Honorable Chair, I would just respond to one or two things, which I think are important aspects that have been asked. Firstly, bearings of it. I think there was a question asked on entity oversight, and I must just highlight the fact that even though the shareholder contacts at the time were not done, they have since been concluded. Part of the challenges have been, do you sign a shareholder compact in terms of the governance arrangements with an what we may sometimes call an entity, but in the true sense is not necessarily an entity. It may be a board, it may be an authority. And the guidance from legal is that we need to check carefully on how we approach and engage with those, particularly as it relates to the Central Drug Authority, as well as the Council for Social Service Professions. So we've gotten guidance on that and shifted on that. Now, we have a framework that we operate within. And that framework has completely been operational. The development of the shareholder compact is part and parcel of the entire framework. And we've had very successful interactions and engagements, including the minister, with the entities, and we've managed to hold the entities accountable within the period of reporting. And we continue to do this, even outside of statutory meetings. We continue to hold them accountable. So that, in essence, may not necessarily be a major implication on the rollout of the work insofar as holding the entities accountable. That continues in earnest and has been done accordingly. We've taken note of the concerns around the other matters that have been raised. I want to, just on the strategy of social workers, just yesterday I had a conversation with the DG of Treasury, and the ministers have directed us, in fact, both ministers, have already spoken about this. And this is beginning to receive favorable response from the Treasury, in the short term at least. And we have a deep dive session where I've asked the team to relook at the strategy on a number of aspects. For example, in the strategy we have not made mention of how we would make use
of former social workers who used to be social workers many years ago and have since retired. And there's a number of other aspects that I've asked the team to look at. We've already shared the draft strategy with Treasury, and they have they are currently commenting on it. And we will come back to provide feedback on how, together with Treasury and other government departments, we are going to be implementing a strategy to absorb social work professions. And again, I must stress, it's not social workers only, but it's social work professions because it covers a range of social...
Service professionals.
So, what did I say? Social work professionals. Social service professions, my apologies. I've been corrected here. Social service professions because it covers a range of other practitioners, including auxiliary social workers, social workers, child and youth care workers, and so on. So those important skills and important people that we require in the system and on the ground in communities. There's a question raised by Honorable, I can't remember who was a member, but it was dealing with how are we dealing with the inefficiencies. I raised at the beginning of the meeting some inefficiencies that we have. Let me start by saying we take, and I will explain how we break down this thing. So we looked at a multi-pronged approach towards addressing challenges of inefficiencies in the organization. Some are process related, some are systems related, some are governance related, and some are administrative related. And let me start with the first one, which deals with the last one rather, which is the administrative sort of approach. And this, of course, talks to consequence management. I think in the past few, months or years, as it were, if you like, as a DG, I've taken really special attention, I pay very special attention to and paid emphasis in terms of holding management accountable. Because particularly when it comes to meeting our targets and a range of other issues, I think it's important to highlight that we need the entire system to work together, from legal to support services in finance to line function and so on and so forth. Everybody is going to work together as a system so that we deliver as a collective. I think that's important. And part of what we've been doing is been driving a very strong, working towards driving shared values and a very strong organizational culture. Because when we have that, we are able to ensure that we're able to deliver as a collective. So we're working on that. But in addition to that, we've introduced what we call an enterprise project management system. And this is part of our business process re-engineering journey, as it were. And of course, we're still looking at other aspects of digitization within the space and automation. But through this, it assists us in keeping track of all the projects that we have as an organization. And I think this is a very useful approach. Of course, one of the other things that we've done is our procurement plans as an organization have become a standing agenda item in some of our governance meetings. We've strengthened our governance meetings. And one of the things we've included, especially the budget committee, is that the procurement plans have to be a standard so that we monitor the spending patterns and make progress on the targets. We've also introduced, as most members have noted and it's in the presentation, in terms of our governance structures, introduce what we call a review session on a quarterly basis. And branches do this firstly within the confines of their units and their branches, and then we do it corporately. I think an important addition that the minister has added to this, it's part of the entire planning configuration, is the fact that we must look at operational plans of each and every unit. And the entire organization must look at that because we are trying to build shared values and a corporate culture within the organization in order to deliver on some of these things. Of course, I've also mentioned the support services. We've actually developed standard operating procedures, whether it be finance, whether it be legal, particularly in program one, so that people understand how long things take to get done, and that they're able to work that into the implementation or the realization of their specific targets. Now, I think, Chair, there's another proposal that came up, I'm told, which is a workshop with members of Parliament. And I just want to say that we would welcome that. I think it's important. Part of what we do, of course, in line with the guidance of the Minister, is to invite members of the committee through the chairperson to some of the very important engagements that we hold. And recently, members were part of the Presidential Social Sector Summit with the President. And I think that part of building a better understanding of the sector, of the work that we do as an organization, is in part of some of these important engagements. And I do think that having a workshop to deep dive, I suppose, into some of the aspects of the organization would certainly be something that we would welcome greatly as an organization, as a portfolio as a whole, and that we look forward to that. And we could, of course, work with the Office of the Chairperson in this regard so that we take that forward. But I think, Chair, we've done justice, I would assume, to some of the presentation and responded to all the questions. I think those targets that were not met, as Tamani has indicated, have certainly been taken on board. The bulk of these have been met, of course, and the balance has been taken on board into the current financial year. And when we come back to you and present quarter one, quarter two, you would see that we've made a great shift in some, if not all, of those targets that were carried. So on that note, Chair, I'd like to thank you for the continued guidance of the committee, particularly in how we shape the work that we do as an organization, and of course in terms of your role as an oversight or a body over the organization. I would like to leave it at that for now and appreciate the continuous guidance and of course the colleagues who have provided responses to questions that have asked. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Linton and the team. Is there anyone who thinks that she hasn't been answered or he hasn't been answered? But you know, Linton, you must try to avoid calling honorable names, because if you don't call my name, maybe I'll be angry and cross with you. But if you just answer the questions that have been asked, it's better that way. Thank you very much for the answers. And then let me check whether members are comfortable enough for now. I know for a fact that it's an ongoing process. We can't be saying we're done asking questions, but we can continue asking questions even in other meetings, even in other reports or in other platforms. Thank you ever so much. Honorable members, I think we have come to the end of this one. Then we have to follow with the A list next to the program. Thanks ever so much, department and officials, all of you, by answering us. Can I ask,
thank you.
Lindy?
Chair?
Yes. Skokele Mfundi. See you at the A-list in Google.
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't know, Sisa, are you still in the meeting?
Yes, I am.
I gave you the powers to co-host the A-list. Will you be able to do so?
Yes, I'm trying to do that now. Okay.
Chair, Sisa Chair is the one that will lead the committee in terms of the A list. I think he'll go clause by clause, and then so that the member can agree on the A list for the next step. Thank you very much, Chair. Also, Chair, Linton's hand is up. I don't know whether she wants to say something before we proceed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to indicate that the minister has returned into the meeting. I just wanted to highlight that. And I wanted to confirm, Honorable Chair, that the rest of the team from DSD can take leave, even though I've asked for two of my colleagues to remain the latter part of your meeting. Permission in that regard is kindly sought. Thank you very much.
Ling Chin, what are you saying about the minister? Pardon?
Oh, no, I was just saying that she had come back into the meeting. We have to navigate between the two meetings. So
okay.
I was just advising her that she had come back, yeah.
Okay. Those that would love to leave, they are excused in a meeting. And those that will stay behind, they are welcome to stay with us. Thank you. Can you introduce yourself, Sisa, and put on your video so that we can see you?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sisa Makabeni. I'm the State Law Advisor responsible for the bill, Chair. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yes, we hear you and we are able to hear you, Makabeni. Thank you,
Chair. Yes, Chair. I can remove the video now, Chair, and I'll take you through the document on the screen.
Okay. Carry on.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I've prepared a document that I think will make it easy for members to follow because you've got about three documents that you should be dealing with, which is the introduced version of the bill, then the A list, and the B version of the bill. So on the document that I've prepared for you, I've got on your left-hand side, the A list. So on the left-hand side, the document that has a B29A 2020, that's your A list. And B29B, that's your B version of the bill that incorporates everything. So it will incorporate your introduced version of the bill and the amendments that would be carried in the A list. Thank you, Chair. Now, the first amendment the Chair proposed in the A list is on clause 2, Chair, of the bill. So where we were changing from 9 proposed members of the board to 14 members. So I've just highlighted for easy reference there for the members in the A list, there is your 14 that was proposed, and then there's your 14 members in the bill. And I'm going to the following one, Chair. There's a hand raised, Chair. I don't know if it's
Chairperson.
Honourable
Member Matsang and Member Abrams, hands are up.
Chairperson, mine is very, very small. It's just that I cannot see. Is it possible that we can enlarge the writing on the document? If not, then it's okay. But I just thought if it's possible, if I could see, please. Thanks.
No, they have to. They must extend the font, please. Enlarge the font.
It will not be possible for me to do that, Chair, because if I do that, then the other part will disappear, Chair, from the screen. So I was thinking, since members have both documents that were sent to them, they would be able to follow us, just making it easier for them to see where the changes are.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you so much.
Yes, Chair. So, Chair, on the left-hand side would be your A list. So the first amendment that is proposed on the A list is on clause one. So it talks to nine members that are now changed to 14 members. Then it's there at the bottom of your B bill, in page two of the B bill, the highlighted part there, the 14 members is reflected there. Then on the second amendment is on clause three, Chairperson. On the left hand side of the bill, there is the prescribed. We're saying prescribed should be inserted after identify on the B bill. And then on the B bill, you can see it there on line 21. There is the prescribed there, Chairperson. And then the next one is on clause four, Chairperson. And then we talked of a reasonable time within which the disbursement and the consultation must take place. So it's highlighted there on the B bill. And then we also talk about the concern that members had with regard to ethical principles. So now we've referenced that to be in line with Section 50 of the Public Finance Management Act, which provides for the fiduciary duties of members of the board. So Chair, it's there at the bottom of the page on the right-hand side. Then I jump to the next page. Then these are the technical changes. We don't, strictly speaking, Chair, we don't have to deal with these things because they are dealt with administratively at the end of the process by the Bills Office. So the changing of 2020 to 2022. So we've done that for now, hoping that the bill will be finished at the end of this term. So we've changed the 2022 in line five of the B bill, and then again in the short title of the bill, 2022. But it can still change shape if the bill is not finalized by the end of the year. Those are the changes, Chair, that were dealt with by the committee and agreed to. That's the end of my presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Much as we want to say to you, when you come to present for the members, you must also come with a very enlarged font so that you don't tell them that you have managed to get it. You do have it. It was forwarded, but you also make an arrangement for it to be enlarged, even if it was only those clauses that have been added, as you have highlighted them. Thank you ever so much, Sister. Can I get the hands from the honorable members to interact with these changes? Honorable Masangu. It's Honorable Alex.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I'm just quickly trying to go through my notes here from 2021. And I'm also trying to go through the presentation because I've made a note here that clause one, clause two, seeks to amend section 17 of the Act, and the proposed amendment mainly tends to reduce the maximum number of members of the board from 15 to 9. So now I'm a little confused why it's 14. Can we just get some clarity on that? And I'm just, you know, trying to go through the presentations from 2021, because my understanding was that we wanted to reduce the number because obviously it's paid board members. So, yeah, we have a fund that, you know, was supposed to give out money, and now we got 14 board members. So if I can just get clarity on that. Thank you.
Okay. It's clear. Can we get that clarity, Sia? Is it Sisa or can you see?
Sisa, Chair. Sisa Makala.
Okay.
This emanates from the previous meeting of the committee chair, where the department came with a proposal following a public submissions chair, that the membership will now be changed from 9 to 14 chair. So Mr. Mchochisa can clarify the chair from the department side on the reasoning for that.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Through you, Chairperson, yes, Advocate Makaveli is correct, and also honorable Abrahams is correct, in the sense that there was a need to reduce the number from 15 to 9. But the actual essence of the comment was also around the odd number, because throughout the document, we were speaking about half of the members to do this and half of the members to do that. So that's where the number 14 came as now a response from the department to say, yes, we can just keep it at 14, which is an even number as opposed to an odd number. And also taking into account the issue of what was being advised during the consultations. But we are not very far from the idea that members may advise that maybe the number 14 is too much and reduce it to any number they would still fit. The floor is still open for that. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Chair, may I respond quickly?
Thank you very much, Advocate Mchochisa. Excuse me. Honorable Alex, Chair, Honorable Aris, and Honorable Marie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, so here's the dilemma and we need clarity on. So now we've made changes again to the specific clause after public comment and things like that, and after we had gone, you know, through the bill as a committee. And now it's, you know, the numbers raised again to 14, and I hear the advocate says that we can change it. And I'm of the opinion that there's a lot more closer numbers to the original 9 that we had agreed to than all the way up to 14. So it's my submission that whether it needs to be an odd number, that we keep it closer to the 9 rather than closer to the 15 that we're trying to move away from, or if it's supposed to be an even number. So that's my submission, and if the legal advisor can then just confirm that, you know, this clause with the 14 didn't go out for public comment, and now it's put back in.
Through your chair, yes, it did not go out.
No, wait. Advocate, wait. Can I also give the other hand so that you answer all the questions? But I hear the issue of the, excuse me, of the odd numbers. And I don't know, Alex, why are you keeping on talking about the odd numbers rather than to go to even numbers, which is 10. Okay, but nevertheless, I can't discuss this with you only. Let's give Aris.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think mine is just, and Alex has covered me somehow. I just want to check these board members, if they will be full-time board members, and what is the financial implication if there's also money involved. We need to know that, because if there's money involved, if this board members will get paid, we need to know what, because we cannot, then why must it be 40 and not less? Bear in mind that we are having this fundraising amendment bill specifically to consolidate all those dormant funds into one fund.
So, which means that it will be one fund that will be administered by 14 people. Why can't this board be smaller then? That is my question that I want to ask.
Thank you. Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, I just have a concern. No? And my concern is you're going to have the refugee relief fund, the state president fund, the social relief fund, disaster relief fund, and then you're going to have this national relief development fund. I am just worried that all these funds is going to come to social development. Will social development be able to run all these funds in one fund? I am just worried because if you look at social development, we have a broad portfolio. Such a lot of things that is happening already there. And will we be able to have the necessary things in place for all these to come together? Because we're talking about a lot of money that has been dormant for a very long time. Why is it coming to the social development department? Because we have all these funds and suddenly they want to make it into one fund. What is the reason for that, and why do you think the social development portfolio will be able to handle this fund? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Can I give over to the advocate, whether it's Advocate Makhabane or it's Advocate Mtochisa? Can you come up with the responses?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me have a time in with regard to the issue of the proposed number, which is 10, which we accept as a department, the proposal from Honorable Abrahams. And the issue about why these funds are being consolidated and under the social development, I think Mr. Anthony Makuridrati can assist us there, who is acting as DDG Social Security. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think these are the old hands. Honorable Aris, lower your hand. And Advocate Ntochis, lower your hand too. Okay. Can we start afresh in terms of discussing this and agreeing and submitting? We are done with submitting the proposal of reducing it, and also to those even numbers that you're talking. But there's a question that has been asked by Honorable Aris in terms of have you looked at the finances and are able to tell us about that?
Yes, I have indicated that Mr. Anthony, who is present with us here, Mokoramiti, is going to assist us in that regard. I responded to
Mr. Anthony.
Yes.
Okay. Who is Mr. Anthony?
He's actually acting Deputy Director General Social Security.
Okay. Over yes, to you. Mr. Anthony, assist us.
Mr. Marty Anthony, yes.
Over to you, Anthony.
Good. Okay. It's now good afternoon, Honorable. I'm not sure if you are able to hear me well. I'm on the road now, and also my colleague who is. For this unit is also on the road. So if you may allow me to come in, I understand she's on the road also.
We are all on the road. Continue, we are all on the road. Continue, we are able to hear you.
Okay. Let me check, Dr. Mokotse, are you able to come in?
Good afternoon, Chairperson, and good afternoon, members, once more. In relation to the question, I apologize, I'm driving on N1, my apologies. In relation to a question on why are we bringing all these funds under one umbrella, is that it's merely for effective and efficient management of these particular funds. Some of these funds are dormant. We have not been able to utilize, they are dormant, and they don't have large funds as such. So it would be easier for us to for the department to manage them easier if they are under one umbrella. So that's basically why we are consolidating all these funds. Thanks.
Then it means, therefore, if you reduce this number, it will also assist you. Né? Thank you. Honorable members, I'm giving over to you.
Chairperson, are we not supposed to accept each clause now? Will Lindy please assist with the next step?
Yes. We are supposed, because the first change has been introduced and then the second change has been introduced. Then the last one is the one that you are submitting and you are saying it needs to come lesser than that 40. So I don't know which other clause do we have to. Can we be guided by the advocate, state law advisor?
The process is a bit confused now, because in the last meeting, the understanding was that members were agreed on us effecting these changes on the bill. So this would have been the meeting to check whether the amendments that were agreed to in the last meeting are incorporated correctly in the bill. So, Chair, if we still now going to change the number to from 14 to 10, then we would need another time to interact with the printers, Chair, to change that 14 to 10, which is the proposal that is before the committee now. So the committee won't be able to now go through clause by clause to adopt the clauses until that process is finalized, Chair.
Can you assist us, Lindy, on what is it that is supposed to happen in terms of changing?
Chair, thank you very much.
Sorry, Lindy. The buses are here at the parliament, at the houses here, né? So I will have to lock off now because the buses are waiting now here outside. So I don't know what is
happening. No, I am also in a bus. Just finish up, we're about to finish. Let's conclude this so that we are not going to come back again as we are doing this. The last meeting, Lindy, can you guide us? What have we agreed in terms of the numbers?
Chair, if there's a consensus that the number of board members be reduced to 10, and then all the committee members are in agreement with that, that is the process that would require for the printers and the legal law advisors to go and craft in the A list and as well as B list. Chair, that changes can be effected and then be brought back to the committee for the adoption.
Last time, what have we agreed upon in terms of the numbers, maybe? That's what I'm asking.
I think, Chair, the department presented their proposal. I think that's what is affected. And now when it came before the committee, there's a discussion that the 14 is not an appropriate number.
a committee took a decision in this meeting now that they want the number to be reduced. That decision needs to be incorporated in the A list. Unless if they say we are adopting in principle and then we must ensure that the number is reduced to 10, but to do that is not procedurally comfortable with that. Unless if you see the entire document being rectified of a decision that you've taken in this meeting and then report back to you. I think in the next meeting, if we agree that we need to reduce the number to 10, and then we forward the A and the B list, and then it will take us 5 minutes, and then there will be that process of going clause by clause, and know very well that all the clauses that you would be adopting is what you all agreed on. Thank you very much.
As the members saying about that, one of the members, because the reality of the matter, the printers have to redo it and correct this number that you are discussing about. Can I get an indication that do we agree and adopt in principle and then saying that the 10 should be the one inserted in the document, or do we say we have to have another meeting, and that meeting definitely will have to be on Friday, not knowing exactly whether will we be able to get these advocates, the legal advisors that are always busy, because we have to fight for the one that is extended, that is Advocate Maccabi. So can I get, I don't want to steamroll the committee members on this.
Chairperson, my hand is up. May I proceed?
Alice.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Well, Chairperson, I would like to, obviously it's my proposal, I'd like to support that number is changed to 10, and I would like to recognize what the committee secretary said, that supporting in principle now would not be procedurally correct, and therefore I'd like to propose we meet on Friday morning for an hour. I don't believe it will take more than an hour. Thank you, Chairperson.
In fact, it needs to be 30 minutes, preferably. Remember, honorable members, who are traveling on Fridays. It's not only, I think it's not wise to say, I apologize, I am in a car, I'm in a bus, I'm in a flight. So let's agree that let's have this meeting for 30 minutes just to look at that. Because we have suggested the number, which is 10. Can we agree on that? Agreed.
Agreed.
Fluent, agreed. Honorable Stock.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I would also like just to, whilst we are agreeing on the meeting on Friday, I would like to again re-emphasize the point that Fridays are very difficult for most of us who are traveling and all of that, like we are indicating, Honorable Chairperson. But it looks like we don't have an option. We just need to agree with the proposal of Honorable Abrams to allow the legal team to go back, because we can't agree in principle. And then we meet on Friday, maybe for 30 minutes or an hour. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Stock. I think we are on agreement in terms of that 30 minutes meeting. And Lindy, can you facilitate that in terms of Friday meeting, just to look at this clause only and for us, if the meeting is at 9:30 to 10, it's going to be fine. And then if the meeting is at 9, it will be end at 9:30. So as to allow thank you very much. If there is nothing, the meeting has adjourned, honorable members. Thank you ever so much, everyone. Thank you, Advocate Maccabi and Advocate Mchochisa.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chair.